using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 13th of December, year of our Lord 2021, day 641 of the worldwide emergency. And as the world is beginning to wake up and protesting the prison camps, the massive fines, the baptism ritual for the new society that you must be vaccinated, we had over the weekend the one-year anniversary of the Trump shot. And so we're going to take a look at that because, you know, it is a wonderful jab, it is a miracle, and it has transformed the world. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Also going to take a look at Julian Assange. I meant to talk about it on Friday. I can't believe that I missed it because I saw it in the morning. It broke at 4 o'clock in the morning just as I was starting to check the news. And I got distracted with some other things and I forgot to talk about it. And now over the weekend, he's had a stroke. So I want to talk about that in depth as well as what is going to be happening now with this Supreme Court ruling that is kind of a mixed bag on the Texas abortion law. Of course, the Missouri abortion law is still before them, and that concerns an issue of when life begins, which is something that the Supreme Court still does not have the authority to decide, even though they did that back in 1973. They usurped their authority, but it is very important for them to maintain that somehow. As I've said many times, as far as the court is concerned, we look at it and we see 3,000 babies being killed every day. We see a black genocide from Planned Parenthood. But they see this as a stake in the ground for their authority in the same way that Marbury versus Madison was a stake in the ground for their authority, saying, well, we can have the final say-so as to whether or not we think any law or action is constitutional or not. And, of course, we saw how that should play out in the Andrew Jackson administration. But we're going to talk about the fact that now, because you have states who do not have the courage to use the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, which backs up their power to defend innocent life, they decided that they're going to try to tack around the headwinds, and they're going to try to do this in a roundabout way instead of addressing the two issues, one, defending life, and two, defending the Constitution. Instead, what they did was they created a mechanism, which I was never very happy about, and I talked about it. I said, the end does not justify the means, because you can protect these babies' lives, and you can do it from the Constitution, and you can do it from principle. But instead, they decided that they would do something else, because they didn't have the courage. And now we have Gavin Newsom saying, I will use the same tactic to come after the Second Amendment in California. And you better believe he will. But let's take a look at the one-year anniversary. I tweeted this out. The only people that I saw pick it up, and it escaped me as well, was vaccine impact. One-year anniversary of President Trump forcing the FDA to give an emergency authorization for the Trump shot. Remember, it is always
emergency. Everybody to get from
city. Everything is about emergency, emergency. It was the emergency order. 641 days ago with an executive order, unleashed a massive amounts of money, trillions of dollars to these governors. And then it also unleashed presumed legal authority that was essentially a medical martial law. And then we had a year ago, that was 641 days ago. Now it was 367 days ago. He did another emergency authorization. Emergency for the vaccine. And everything is proceeding on an emergency. The vaccine mandates for the Trump juice, that's proceeding on an emergency as well. Everything's an emergency. So I tweeted out the article, and I said the one-year anniversary of Trump demanding emergency authorization of the Trump shot. Remember, the miracle jab was made possible through corrupt crony capitalism and the removal of all due diligence at, by the way, the insistence of President Trump. The interesting thing about it is that, you know, Trump is typically presented as a divider. And yet what he has done, he's managed to unite the conservative bootlicking shills as well as the liberals. They're now united in the love of the Trump juice. Isn't that amazing? Here's a little bit of a video that was put together by Vaccine Impact. You'll find this on their Rumble channel. This is just the beginning of it. It's about an eight-minute video. But here's a recall. A year ago.
The Food and Drug Administration says no COVID-19 vaccines will be approved without passing its safety checks.
Science will guide our decisions. FDA will not permit any pressure from anyone to change that.
Mr. President, the FDA is reportedly considering stricter guidelines for the emergency authorization of a COVID vaccine. Are you okay with that?
Well, I tell you what, we're looking at that. That has to be approved by the White House. We may or may not approve it.
The White House is now threatening the head of the FDA, suggesting that if that agency doesn't authorize the Pfizer vaccine by the end of today, Commissioner Stephen Hahn's job could be on the line.
Sir, it's designed to improve trust in the vaccine. Do you think that's not needed?
Well, I have tremendous trust in these massive companies.
I have really good news. Today, our nation has achieved a medical miracle. We have delivered a safe and effective vaccine in just 9 months. This is one of the greatest scientific accomplishments in history. I am thrilled to report that the FDA has authorized the Pfizer vaccine.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Hahn's job was on the line. I mean, if he hadn't approved that, then Trump would have fired him. And then I don't know if he would have gotten a job on the Moderna board. Because that's where he is now. He's on the Moderna board. And the previous Trump FDA commissioner is now on the board of Pfizer. Nothing to see here, right?
Should we be expecting yearly boosters?
You know, George, it's tough to tell because the third shot of an mRNA could not only do what we absolutely know it does, is it dramatically increase the level of protection. But from an immunological standpoint, it could very well increase the durability of protection by things that you can't readily measure by the level of antibodies, that you might have a maturation of the immune system that would prolong the durability. You don't know that, George, until you just follow it over a period of months. If it becomes necessary to get yet another boost, then we'll just have to deal with it when that occurs. But I'm hoping from an immunological standpoint that third shot of an mRNA and the second shot of a J&J will give a much greater durability of protection than just the 6 months or so that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, they're not going to test the vaccines. They're going to test you. They're going to test you when you're not even sick. But these sick psychopaths are going to look the other way, explain away as a coincidence every indicator that these things are harming people in numbers that we have never seen before. Oh, that's an acceptable risk. It's a coincidence and so forth. Let's not test the vaccines. Let's test you, even though you're not sick, because you are not vaccinated. Yeah, you know, it was a year ago, and now a year later, we're saying, well, we're going to have boosters, and we'll have to wait and see. I'll just have to, I'll let you know when I've decided, says Fauci, how frequently you'll have to get these. Maybe it will be 1 year. Maybe it will be every year. And I would suggest that if it is, that we make it December the 11th. And we can call it the Trump Pharma Day. Because in honor of Trump, or maybe call it the Trump Fauci Pharma Day. A little bit long, but hey, you know, we've got President's Day now. You know, we combined two presidential holidays into one. We just call it President's Day. And these guys truly are the founding pharma fathers. They're the founding pharma fathers. That's what they are. They have created the government that exists at the whims of the pharmaceutical companies. So they are the pharma founders. And they should be honored as such. So Trump and Fauci should be honored with an annual day. And this is the way it works. On Trump Fauci Pharma Day, you all get the day off. See, you got perks, just like the vaccines. You get a day off, and you go roll up your sleeve and bow the knee and take the jab as a sign of fealty and allegiance to this corporate fascist government that has replaced the American government. And then if you don't get it, you don't have to come back to work because you're fired. How about that? Isn't that a great way to celebrate the Trump Fauci Pharma Day? Our founding pharma fathers. It made me want to puke when I saw Alex Jones comparing Trump to George Washington. Like, are you kidding me? George Washington, as the legend goes, could not tell a lie. He was known for his integrity. What was Trump known for? His lack of integrity. He is the antithesis of George Washington. He cannot tell the truth, and he can't stick to it either. Let me tell you that the only difference between Trump and Biden and their pharmaceutical masters, it's a tag team. It's a professional tag team wrestling. It was always planned that it was going to go through the companies, and that still is the primary plan that they have. That's what's behind this executive order to make it go through the companies. The difference, I believe, between the two of them, if somehow Trump had stayed in, he would have offered this as a carrot. If you give the jab, you are an essential business, and you now get some preferential treatment, maybe get a subsidy, some other stuff like that. And if you don't, you know, hey, all bets are off. Hey, look at the way the Republican governor Brad Little in Idaho did it. You know, first they came back, the Republican legislature said, I think you're abusing this emergency, everybody to get from city. And they said, we're going to bring the legislature back together and we're going to end this declared state of emergency. And he said, no, you're not. And he dismissed them like some kind of an imperial governor from Great Britain that we fought a revolution, our fathers fought a revolution to get rid of. Because this is a new government. It is a new day. This has absolutely no resemblance to anything in the Constitution. It has no resemblance to America. And so he just dismissed the legislature. Then he put together a scheme, and Brad Little, Republican governor of Idaho, calls the Republican legislature back in and says, here's the bill. We are going to reward people who push social distancing and force you to wear a mask. If you've got a business and you do that, we will say that no one can sue you, implying then that you'll be sued out of existence if somebody asserts that they caught COVID at your business because you didn't have people wearing masks. Do you see how that works? It's a perverse, if you will, incentive. Rather than just coming out and saying, you don't do it, I'm going to put you out of business, I'm going to hit you with $15,000 to $140,000 fines. Actually, it's $14,000. Actually, it's a little bit, as I point out, $13,000 is really odd amounts. $13,762 or something like that. And then the same thing with $130,000 fine. But that's the way the Democrats do it. And that's why I said we're actually better off with a dangerous, power-grabbing, liberty-hating individual like Joe Biden, because people will see what this is about. Whereas with these other guys, Brad Little and Trump, you know, they do it in the back door with these incentives. Well, if you do what I say, I'll protect you from lawsuits. But otherwise, I think it's going to be open season on you, and I'm going to encourage people to sue your pants off. So Fauci says we're just going to have to deal with yearly boosters if they become, necessary, right? Of course they're going to be necessary. Stephanopoulos says that, and he says, you know, George, ask him, until you do it and you follow it over a period of months, you just don't know. Well, isn't that true of the safety and the efficacy of the vaccine? I mean, he's saying we just don't know how effective it's going to be. We're going to have to follow it for a while. We've got to, you know, watch it. to see what the long-term effects are. Same thing is true of safety, except they didn't do any of that. Instead, you've got the government, you've got the FDA and the Department of Justice saying, you want to see the data that we use to test this stuff? Well, we can't get that to you for 55 years. Then they came back and said, no, wait, we're wrong. We can't do it for 75 years because some of the younger staff might still be alive and might be subject to a Nuremberg-style trial, right? That's why that's going that way. So vaccine impact, he puts it up. Brian says, by the way, I suspect this will be our least shared video for the year, the one of Trump pushing this thing through. And just a reminder, those of you who will surely want to email me and threaten me, probably demanding that I take this video down, that when you contact me, you're agreeing to our terms of use and giving me permission to publish your comments and your contact information should I choose to do so. Well, yeah, I know. He knows that he's going to have bricks thrown at him because they always are. You know, if Brian at Vaccine Impact and I wanted to win a popularity contest and grow our audience, we would not be criticizing Trump, but that's not my objective. My objective is to show you who the traitors are, to keep you away from this bioweapon, which didn't come out of Wuhan. It came out of the White House and the pharmaceutical companies. That's where it came out of. We need to be concerned about Wuhan, and we need to stop gain of function, and I agree with that. But I was absolutely opposed. I still have people sending me stuff saying, you know, here's this from Dr. Francis Boyle. I've agreed with Francis Boyle. I've had him on many, many times. But, you know, when I was at InfoWars, Alex brought him on and brought me on so that Francis Boyle could say every time I said something, he could repeat. He could begin by saying, well, with all due respect, this is a heinous bioweapon and we're all going to die. And I'm sorry that Dr. Boyle has discredited himself with these dire predictions that created fear last year. But I said from the very beginning, and I'll double down again, this is why I said on Friday to the person who said, you better say that there is no virus. You see, on the one hand, we got people who are arguing about the bioweapon and saying, well, this everybody shut everything down. That was InfoWars' position for the first three, 4 months of this thing. Everybody shut everything down, buy storable food from us, and just lock down because we're all going to die. Because it's gain of function gone bad. And then you got people who say, just tell everybody that it's not even real. And, you know, InfoWars made that switch about 4 months into it. They stopped putting Mike Adams on, who was pushing the panic button, and they started putting on John Rappaport, who was saying, this is nothing. This is a complete fraud because we've watched this game all before. Talking about it at that point in time from a statistical standpoint. Before you had all the admissions, we don't have the isolated virus and we're testing for 52 or 59 different things. Each and every one of these tests is testing for a different sequence because we don't have a standard, because we don't have anything isolated. That's in the FDA documents. But if you want to go to either of these positions that, you know, we need to lock Fauci up because it was gain of function and he unleashed a plague on the world along with the Chinese communists. That's typically what the mainstream Republican line is, because it attacks China. Or going the other direction and saying this thing is a total fraud. I say still what I said before this happened. I said regardless of whether this is nothing or whether it is a plague that has been unleashed upon mankind, deliberately engineered, deliberately released, we've got to stop the lockdowns, not wear masks, and understand that the vaccine is coming, and that's going to be the control tactic, demanding that you have some kind of a passport, which means an ID. That was it, and that's still it, and that's still what I'm going to focus on because I don't want people getting this shot. I don't want that on my conscience. And if you want to talk to people at this point in time, they're not going to pay any attention to analysis. They're not going to pay any attention to math. They're not going to pay any attention to the history of these experts lying to people continuously. You have to start to get them to think. And I think the best approach is what Alex Berenson had. He said, when you find a skeptic, don't go into all the different aspects of this and the details. Just ask them so that you can get them to think, if the vaccines work, then what's going on? And let them explain it to you. Because if they explain it, they've got to come up with some idea that makes sense. And they may talk themselves out of all of this. But if you come at them with these facts, they're going to say, well, your facts are fake because the experts said blah, blah, blah. You're not going to argue these people. They've been too far psychologically gaslighted over the last year, and they only trust in experts. They don't want to think for themselves. So you have to ask them a question that's going to make them think for themselves. If the vaccines work, what's going on? So Fauci says, as I pointed out last week, it's a matter of when, not if, the definition of being fully vaxxed changes to include three jabs. Except that Pfizer says, we got three vaccine doses, and we think that improves things with Omicron. Who cares? Omicron has been proven to not be anything that is dangerous. I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, Trevor Noah got into some dangerous ground. He questioned big pharmaceutical companies and their motivations, especially in the case of Omicron. Now, this liberal who has been curated and imported in order to push the government narrative actually made the mistake of thinking for himself for a moment. And he said, the guy who stands to make millions of dollars from the new vaccines says, we need new vaccines? What? He said. And then he got hammered by the true believers. He was questioning Moderna's Stefan Bonsall. He even made a joke about him buying a Ferrari with his vast profits. Look, he went from zero to multi-billionaire overnight because they'd never had a product. They'd made a lot of money with happy stories and narratives on Wall Street, but he'd not had a product. He'd not had a vaccine or a treatment that anybody had approved. It had always failed when it actually had a test. It had shown that it was not effective, as we now see in real life. You know, they didn't want to wait for the test, but now we know a year later that it's not safe, and it's certainly not effective. Breakthroughs. Like I said, they want to compare this to seatbelts. Okay, you got a seatbelt that breaks through all the time, but you're not going to recall it, right? Anyway, he says, I'm not saying the CEO of Moderna is lying. I'm just saying I don't think he's the most objective source of this topic, and I'll wait to see what neutral experts say about a new vaccine. And then the social media bots hit him. And they're not actually bots. A lot of these people are blue check marks. Trevor Noah, indistinguishable from an anti-vaxxer right now. See? You must not question the ritual. You must not question the Trump juice. This is a liberal guy who just looks at this and saying, what? Is this, do they have some ulterior motives here? Are they saying this in order to make money? Maybe we ought to wait and see. Another person says, this is irresponsible and can get people killed. Another one, this is literally the same rhetoric that anti-vaxxers use, like Michael Gunner, right, in Australia, Northern Territory. And he says, if you are talking about choice, and if you push back against my mandates, you are an anti-vaxxer. It doesn't matter if you've had the vaccine or not. And I will thrash you, roughly. He talks like that. This is no different than anti-vax messaging, said another. So they're all calling him an anti-vaxxer. Well, you know, when we look at CEOs who are anti-vax, maybe you ought to look at BioNTech's CEO, Uğur Şahin, a Turk who is head of the German company. Here he is when he was asked about whether or not he got the jab.
Allow me a personal question. I know that you're not particularly fond of answering personal questions, but you and your wife, Dr. Tuaci, you play such a central role in the development of the virus, I have heard that you yourself have not taken the vaccine yet. Why not?
So I am legally not allowed to take the vaccine at the moment. We, of course, consider to make that possible. It is more important for us that our co-workers and partners get vaccinated. So our goal is to produce more than 1.3 billion doses in 2021. And that can only be done if we can really continue to work 24/7 without any interruption. And we need to ensure that we protect the co-workers and our team members from COVID-19 infection, because that would mean interruption and delay and waste of vaccine doses, and therefore we consider to make an extra batch independent from the European contingent available to collaboration partners who are supporting us and to our team members.
But I understand why are you not legally allowed to take the vaccine?
Because there is a priority. The vaccine is not allowed to be taken outside of this priority list. And what is also important, we were even not allowed to participate in clinical trials because per law it is not possible to include company people into such trials, which is really fine. But now we have to deal with the more important challenge that we need to ensure functionality of our whole company, of our teams, and therefore this is needed, and I think we will find a legal and fair solution for that.
Isn't that great? I love it.
Many thanks.
How altruistic these billionaires are, especially the big pharmaceutical companies. It is really reassuring to see that they put the health of billions of people ahead of theirs, and even of their staff. We will make you get injected, but we will wait. Because we saw the same thing from, this is BioNTech, we saw the same thing from their CEO partner at Pfizer. And as that's been making the rounds, he recently posted a rebuttal to it. He put it up on LinkedIn. And oh, by the way, you got to watch out. You can get purged off of LinkedIn if you question any of this stuff. Stephen Kirsch found that out, and he's been kicked off of LinkedIn again. Do not criticize the pharmaceutical companies or their executives. But they can respond on LinkedIn, and they can say things like this. I had to do it. He said, since then, I had many of my friends urging me to share a photograph of myself being inoculated. But he said, I did not do that. And he said, my concern is to not make this about myself. I want to contribute to scientific transparency and provide data, facts, and insights, which is why they're going to embargo the data for now 75 years. It's all about transparency, of course, isn't it? Or if you look at the agreements that Pfizer and BioNTech had with Europe, as those European members of parliament held up the document, said, we had to fight to get this, and look at what this is, and it was all blacked out. And they were furious, and should be, and you should be. But, of course, not widely reported. He said, however, since that interview, my wife and I have now gotten two doses and a booster. And you can trust us, even though there's not even any photographs to put up about that. But they had to get a billion people done. And you know, if he had gotten in there and got ahead of those billion people and all of his staffers and everything, we could have had a shortage. There could have been somebody who died because they didn't get his Trump juice. And so we just wouldn't want to have that happen. And so he, in an act of self-sacrifice, he and his co-CEO forewent the vaccination of the Trump shot. This reminds me of the joke that you see done over and over again in the movies, right? Where somebody goes in, they know there's this murderer who's been poisoning people, and they sit down, and the murderer pours them a drink and hands it to them. And they say, well, and they do a distraction. Well, what was that over there? And as they do that, they switch the glass. Then the murderer does something to distract that person, switches the glass. And then the other person might go, make the movement, but not switch the glass. I mean, it's like, okay, you first. Who's got the poison here? Well, Israel is going to consider a fourth vaccine for patients. They're already ahead. They're always got to be first. You know, the Israeli government, they got to jump ahead of everybody. We're going to have our people vaccinated before anybody else, and we're going to get to number four. Seattle Times, story by Victoria Knight, no relation. Is it time to change the definition of fully vaxxed? Well, it's a matter, as Fauci said, of not if, but when. So is it time? Is it the when? Now, are we in the when? Yeah, are you tired of winning? It's been more than 6 months, says Victoria, since many Americans finished their vaccination course. And statistically, their immunity is waning. Isn't that interesting? Well, that's just a matter of fact. I mean, nothing to be surprised about there, that you got, you know, two shots and they didn't last the full 6 months. That's not anything to scratch your head about, is it? It was an odd thing to have two shots to begin with. And I always questioned that. Like, what is this? Is this a two-part bioweapon? What's the deal? That's being deep frozen, and then you got to get two shots, and they got to be exactly 30 days apart. Why are they pulling on us? But now, that's just a matter of course. You get two shots, and it's not going to last for 6 months even. At the same time, says Victoria, cases of infections with the Omicron variant have been reported in at least 15 states. And the Omicron is distinguished by at least 50 mutations, some of which appear to be associated with increasing transmissibility. And guess what? Nobody's getting sick. Nobody's going into the hospital. Nobody's dying. Not a single death reported from Omicron that I'm aware of, because if there had been somebody that they could claim had died from Omicron, you know it would be at the top of the Drudge Report with a red flashing light, and it would be featured on all the news reports, don't you know? So is it dangerous? Well, it's easily transmitted, and it's got lots of mutations. Is it dangerous? You know, we've had our own American government on multiple occasions expose people as part of their germ games. So, you know, if we had a bioweapon attack, I don't know, maybe on the New York subway, or if we had a bioweapon attack where something was released on the west coast of California, we need to figure out how that's going to spread. And so they deliberately, in those two cases and in many more, expose people in California and expose people in New York on the subway to a pathogen that they said wasn't a pathogen. It was just a, you know, bacteria or something that they could easily trace. But don't worry, because it's harmless. Well, is it? You had some people who did get sick. But they said, don't worry. It's harmless. We're just doing this as a test. How is that any different from the Omicron? If the Omicron is easily transmissible, and what they used on the New York subway and on the coast of California was easily transmissible, but, you know, it was harmless. So don't get upset about it. This is just your government doing, you know, government things. So go away. It's government stuff. It's not an emergency yet. We'll come back and let you know when it's an emergency. But right now, it's just government doing its government stuff. And how dare you question government? Everything is about security, safety, national security, national safety. So go away. We'll let you know when you need to be scared. But now they're telling you need to be scared because this thing is easily transmitted and doesn't make you sick. Amtrak is going to cut service. Listen to the headline from The Hill. Amtrak to cut service as employees refuse vaccines. See, it's the employees. The employees are cutting service. It's not Amtrak itself doing this because they want to, because there is not even a pretended executive order in effect right now from Biden. He did this in four different ways. Remember, he had, first of all, an executive order for the military and federal employees. He had an executive order for federal contractors. Then he had OSHA do a thing for all private companies with 100-plus employees. I guess Amtrak would go there because Amtrak, I think, is supposed to be private now. And then there was the one that was targeted towards hospitals with threats of financial ruin from CMS, the people who do Medicare and Medicaid. And so all of those have been put on hold by federal judges, except for the one for the military and federal employees. Doesn't mean it's right. It's still, He's still putting out an executive order for something for which he has no constitutional authority, and he is still violating people's religious liberty. He's still violating the Constitution. And we have some people who are standing up to that. Good for them. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, a big profile case of that. There is no federal mandate in place for Amtrak as a private company. So here's what the headline should say. Amtrak cuts service because they're firing employees for refusing the Trump juice or something like that. It's Amtrak that's doing this. Amtrak doesn't even have a gun stuck to their head in the form of a fine from Biden. They're doing it because they want to. But they take the headline on the Hill and they make the employees, the unvaccinated employees, the villains. You understand? That's what's happening everywhere. The unvaccinated are the problems. You know, we even have a cream cheese shortage. And they're saying it's because of hackers. That surprised me. I figured it was going to be blamed on the unvaccinated. Because, you know, if you got a cream cheese shortage, that's the perfect opportunity to run a smear campaign. But they're saying that Amtrak, they have 5% of the employees have not gotten the mandate. And then they even point out in the Hill, the mandate is temporarily halted following a ruling from a federal judge. So they don't have to do this. They're doing it because they want to. And they're doing it because the plan was always to roll it out through the private companies. Going back to before they even had the vaccine, you had the New England Journal of Medicine saying, we don't want to mandate these by law because that will invite due process challenges. We want to do it through private companies so they can't challenge this in court. That was always the plan. That was back in March of 2020 they were doing that. And I said, why is this organization doing this? All right, they're always talking about political issues that are not medical. MSNBC's Heilman, Sieg Heilman. I think this is or her first name. Sieg. Hey, Sieg. No, that name is actually John. John Sieg Heilman said on Meet the Press, there are 30 million people right now who are ready to take up arms for President Trump. Well, you know, and he says these people, and it's not just him. That's on MSNBC. In the UK, you got a psychologist who is making the rounds saying that hardcore vaccine refuseniks may need to be de-radicalized like terrorists and punished. That's the headline from Information Liberation. This guy who is making the rounds is also talking to not just their TV, but also picked up by the Telegraph in the UK, a major newspaper publication. His name is Professor Stefan Lewandowski, no relation, I guess, to the Trump guy. But he's saying, hey, if you are not getting vaccinated, you need to be de-radicalized because you're a terrorist and you need to be punished. Just put you in a camp. And that's rolling around. Well, we have MSNBC's Sieg Heilman saying 30 million people right now ready to take up arms for Trump. See, this is the problem with January the 6th, the problem that I had with Trump. And, you know, again, it was a year ago on December the 11th, 6 days before I parted ways. But actually, I parted ways right then, hardcore. And I parted ways with all this January the 6th stuff. I said, why are you still talking about this election when nothing has been done really to challenge this effectively? Nothing had been done. Most of the money was going into the coffer. Trump and RNC took out $250 million, a quarter of $1 billion from Trump supporters. And unless you contributed more than $8,000, it all went to Trump and the RNC, mostly to Trump. If you gave $8,001, then $1 would go to fighting the election fraud. Actually, what it would do is go into the pocket of Rudy Giuliani and people like Sidney Powell, who did nothing. They didn't take it and have get their allies in Republican-controlled legislatures where they had a razor-thin margin and say, we need to have you take a look at this and send a second slate of electors. And so I talked about that. I talked about why are we standing up for this man who rolled over for Big Pharma and for the globalist and imposed this vaccine on us just a week ago. And now you're still talking about that. This is nothing but a grifting operation because you're getting paid to make speeches, Alex. That's what it was. And so when you look at this, and you say you got 30 million people right now ready to take up arms for Trump. We got 200 million people who bared their arm, rolled up their sleeve, and bared their arm for a Trump shot. And conservative and liberal. So who's crazier, right? Who's crazier? The people taking the Trump Kool-Aid? And it's interesting, we got now got a lot of people talking about the AIDS-like symptoms because it attacks your immune system. I called it the Trump Kool-Aid. And I said, no, we just need to call it Trump AIDS. That's what the vaccine is, because it the vaccine, the bioweapon, produces acquired immune deficiency. You acquire it by getting the thing shot in your arm multiple times. So the people who are taking taking up arms or rolling up their arms for the Trump juice, they are the ones who are the crazy cultists. The government has become terrorists. They're engaging in a fear campaign to achieve political goals. That is textbook definition of terrorism. So this guy, this professor Stefan Lewandowski on UK television, says a, quote, de-radicalization program like those given to former terrorists or cult members might be the only way to dissuade some hardcore anti-vaxxers from their beliefs. So we got to lock us up in a prison camp. Now, that's what I will take up arms for. You want to see 30 million people in the U.S. take up arms or more to fight this? And that's really the fight that we should be having. They're still holding rallies and events talking about the election that they have done absolutely nothing to. They haven't brought any receipts. They haven't had any meaningful explanation. There's just a lot of innuendo in challenging this. There has to be specifics. Let me tell you. Every one of these elections is corrupt. We know that. But you have to show evidence. They've not done that. And so if we're going to fight against this war, we need to understand who our enemies are. And we need to take up arms and defense, it needs to be against the people who are trying to vaccinate us. But this guy's going the other way around. He says around 6 million eligible people in the UK have not received a single jab. It's going to be hard for them to put that many people in prison. But, 6 million people in concentration camps and executed, it could be done. Uh-huh. Right? He told the news agency, he says, they'll refuse anything. They'll say, I'm not going to wear a mask. That's right. I'm not going to get vaccinated. That's right. I don't think climate change is happening. That's right. COVID is a hoax, and so is climate change. And you can evidence this by the fact that they both have exactly the same solution, quote unquote. You'll own nothing and you'll go nowhere and you'll eat bugs and on and on and on. And we'll watch everything. That's the solution to both of these existential crises that we're faced with, that they keep telling us we should be very afraid. So he says another measure would be to introduce a vaccine mandate, which he said will, quote, disgruntle a few people, but it can be effective. Well, let's put some mandates on these people. He goes on to say, but for those with more extreme views, these methods may not be effective. He said, in the ideal world, time and money permitting, you can engage even those people in a very slow, long-term process where you affirm their right to have these beliefs rather than telling them something about themselves that they don't want to hear. Let's just put it that way, he said. So you tell them something positive, you then engage them in what is effectively the same as a de-radicalization process for former terrorists or cult members. Because we're really talking, when we get down to that small number of committed refusers, we're talking about the psychology of cults and extremism, and it's very similar psychology. Isn't it amazing how he's doing psychological projection? He knows what that is. These people will project their values onto you. You'll have the Clintons come up with a dirty dossier all about their perverse sexual fantasies, and they'll project it onto somebody else. Or you'll have them project their crimes onto other people while they get away with it. This happens all the time. One of the reasons he said these hardcore refuseniks exist is because they can live in their own ecosystem of misinformation. So let's put them in an ecosystem behind bars. And let's make sure that we, as the final arbiters of all truth, will get rid of any information that we don't want them to hear. And we'll make sure they miss that information. Chris Minahan at Information Liberation says it's truly hilarious hearing a delusional libtard professor telling other people they live in a bubble. And he's got a chart of where these people fall on. Just listen to some of the insane ideas that they embrace as gospel truth. Men are allowed to redefine themselves as women and access women-only facilities, or breastfeeding being renamed chest feeding, or children being allowed to use puberty blockers, children, to permanently change their sex. The idea that Britain is systematically or institutionally a racist country, that people face losing their jobs for writing or for liking politically incorrect posts on social media, environmental protest groups causing damage to property and disrupting city centers are just fine. And shorter sentences for real criminals, people who are violent and vicious, you let them out. It's the people who think wrongly that you lock up. So who is the cult here? Who is the cult? Yeah. That was the TV interview, but of course he also got his article put up on the Telegraph. Who is the cult and who are the heroes? This is number two. On a Navy destroyer, his name is Commander Lucian Kintz, commander of the USS Winston Churchill, second in command. He reportedly applied for religious exemption, but we don't honor the Constitution anymore, and we certainly don't honor people's religious convictions anymore, not in this America, with a K. And so that was refused by the Navy, because the Navy hasn't granted anyone, a religious exemption. And that includes the people in the Marines, zero religious exemptions. They don't want anybody who has any ethical backbone. And these people with the ethical backbone, this guy was 18 months away from becoming the commander of that destroyer. And it was his principles, his fidelity to the Constitution, his fidelity to his religious beliefs, for which he's being purged. Think about that. Think about what is in store for this military. He was relieved of duty, quote, due to loss of confidence in his ability to perform work duties. Couldn't perform the work duties that he's been doing all these years without having that Trump juice, could he? And then this is what's happening in Germany.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's some pretty scary stories. I mean, just have to go north of Austria, which is obviously Germany. And there are three stories, I think, that tell a really good story. The first one was reported in Die Welt, which is the equivalent of The Guardian in Germany. And it's essentially about the ritual humiliation of children who are asked to go to the front of the class and state their vaccination status daily. Those who are vaccinated are applauded. Those who are not have to explain why they're not. So that's the one story, I think, that really kind of should raise an alarm bell for people who are for the mandate. The other one is the discussion of wristbands for people to go shopping, and those people who don't have the wristbands won't be able to go shopping across a multitude of stores. The third one, which I think is possibly more reminiscent of 1930s Germany, was an attack on coffee shops who were giving out coffees for free for people who were either vaxxed or unvaxxed. And that was in Berlin, and it was reported in the Tagesspiegel. And in fact, the campaign against that these various coffee shops was launched by the Tagesspiegel itself.
Let's talk about the one in the middle there, the wristbands. You know, I was given that picture by Goat Tree before any of this stuff happened. Lockdown. Remember the green wristband? So this is what they're going for. And of course, you know, the electronic passports on your phone, stuff like that, is a way to automate that. But again, just as they're talking, you got to have that green wristband to show that you're approved. Whether they do it in a computerized version or that. That was the way they were rehearsing it because he wasn't working on manufacturing wristbands. He's a computer guy. We knew what this was headed for, right? It was because they rehearsed it for 20 years, from Dark Winter in 2001 until, you know, this 19 years. They rehearsed it multiple times. There's a very good section in RFK Jr.'s book about Fauci, about how this is really a CIA coup, how the CIA was at the epicenter, along with Johns Hopkins and Bill Gates and the CDC and all the usual suspects, Kaiser Soze, the rest of these people, right? the biggest trick they ever played was making you think that they weren't involved in this, as Kaiser Soze would say. But if you take the usual plot device they do in the movies where they have a bulletin board and they stick up all the different characters and you start connecting the lines to all these different things, you see exactly how this works. And you would see that on an annual basis, they would have one or two of these every year. And Event 201 was just the final one. Dark Winter was the first one. And there were some others that got some attention, but they did it multiple times a year typically. And it was always the same rehearsal. They were rehearsing how they were going to they had people from the news media that they were giving information to, and they were repeating it for them. Oh, that's part of a rehearsal, right? But the guys who were running it were also training the people who were going to implement it. You know, it's a compartmentalization. And at the end of every one of these simulations, they would say, well, you know, everybody died or most of the people died or too many people died because you didn't have draconian enough lockdown soon enough and because you didn't push through the vaccine quickly enough. Those are the two issues, draconian lockdown and vaccine, draconian lockdown and vaccine. So we had this wristband thing. It's like, yeah, I know, we've seen this before. We've seen this before. But then the ritual humiliation of children. Those who are vaccinated on a daily basis, the kids have to get up in front of the class on a daily basis, and they would declare their vaccination status. This is straight out of Orwell. This is insane. And you want to talk about bullying? You know, all this stuff about putting boys and girls' bathrooms, and that's supposed to protect them from bullying, right? Who's doing the bullying here? And if you're unvaccinated, it's not just enough to get applause for being vaccinated or to get the disapproval and the to be ostracized because you are not vaccinated. No, no, you have to then explain on a regular basis why. Don't tell me that these kids aren't going to be dying to do this without notifying their parents. They want to join the Hitler Youth because they can't stand the peer pressure. You know, there's two aspects of this, the Milgram experiment, where you do everything that the people in authority say, and then the other part of this, which is a big part of what social media is the Ash experiment came out about the same time. You get exactly the same thing done if you have the vast majority of people giving the wrong answer to a very, very obvious question, typically things like, you know, which of these three lines is shortest? And they made it very, very obvious so that they could test the peer pressure. And if the vast majority of people in the class that were in on the gag said that it was something other than that short line, these people would second guess themselves and they would also go along with the peer pressure. You think that's not going to work on a child? It works on adults. That's why you have social media. You have mainstream media to push the Milgram experiment, and you have social media to push the Ash experiment and to do it with bots if necessary. So those who are not, who are vaccinated are applauded. Those who are not have to explain why not. And that should be very concerning for anybody. Austria has ended its latest lockdown, but only for the vaccinated people. They said, we're going to open up now with a seatbelt, meaning the vaccine. Well, guess what? This is the seatbelt that breaks through all the time, doesn't it? As for keeping unvaccinated citizens locked up, De Fuhrer said, there is the offer of science that by getting vaccinated, these troubles can be quickly put aside, and that then common freedom can actually be lived together. You don't get your freedom unless you do what I say. Austrians are begging for help. The unvaccinated, as I've pointed out last week, are facing up to a year in prison. as far as I can tell, these Austrian regulations have not been released exactly yet. We've had a couple of news media organizations say that they have seen them. The reports, however, vary. Some of them say that they can hit you with a massive fine once every 3 months, so four times a year. And then if you don't pay those fines, then they hit you with an even bigger fine as a penalty. You know how that works. Some people are saying they can do it multiple times a day. So we'll have to wait and see the actual regulations. Either way, it's an abomination. And then in Israel, you have the Israeli prime minister. See, it's not just a crackpot propaganda psychologist going on British TV and talking to the Telegraph. This is the Israeli prime minister, says that the unvaccinated are like machine gun wielding killers. Oh, see, that's another projection. The Israelis are the machine gun wielding killers, and they call you that because you're unvaccinated, the Israeli government. Israeli actress and singer Avital Lavigne has decided to give up her career and to take a stand for freedom. She's created the Testimonies Project, and she talked to, did an interview with LifeSite News. You can see this on their site with John Henry Weston. She's got the Testimonies Project to highlight the untold stories of those injured by the vaccine, since their government, the Israeli government, has refused to even report this information. As they point out, unlike the United States, Canada, and other nations, which have a government databases of vaccine injury and death reports, Israel doesn't even have such a system. We're so much more advanced. Here in America, we have a system that's run by the CDC, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS. And yet, the CDC calls VAERS fake news. They call their own government reporting system fake news. So we're much more advanced than the Israelis are, right? The Israelis don't even have one. We have it, and then the government runs it, and then they discredit it at the same time. But she goes on to say, you cannot speak anything other than the narrative, and that includes doctors and nurses. People are afraid to come out with different opinions. Oh, it's totally different here in free America, right? See, this is why this is a global war. The same thing is being done to everybody worldwide, just at a different speed and with different nuances. And I'm saying to you that not only is this a global war against everyone by their own government, where the people leading all the national governments, with very, very few exceptions, probably less than, you can probably count them all on one hand, but with very, very few exceptions, all of these leaders, whether you're talking about Trump or Biden or, you know, conservative Canadians like Kenny, or liberal Canadians like Trudeau, or conservatives like Bojo, or liberals like Sturgeon in Scotland. It doesn't matter in any country that you go to. In Australia, some of the most authoritarian ones there were conservatives or people who were libertarians. They called themselves liberal Democrats, but they were classical liberals. Libertarians is what we would say here in the U.S. So it doesn't matter what your supposed political philosophy is or what party you're associated with. They're all doing the bidding of their Davos masters. Is it a surprise when these guys go, all these different political parties and different political philosophies, and they go sit at their feet on an annual basis, or they meet in secret at places like Davos, like Bilderberg? They celebrate it at Davos, at Bilderberg or Club of Rome, or what do they do? Their secret meetings. But they're all in on this. My point being, as we talk about a New World Order government, folks, the global government is here now. The global government is here now. If you look at what is happening, there's absolutely no question. We are under global governance. It's not coming. It's arrived. Think about that. And understand where we are right now. We already have imposed a global government, and we have a global corporate media, and it is global governance in conjunction with multinational corporations. Unvaccinated close contacts must self-isolate in the UK, even if they have a negative test. But if you are tagged as being somebody who was in contact with somebody who they then have a positive test with, if you are double jabbed, you don't have to go into quarantine if you test negative. So, two different rules. This is not about science. This is about punishing people because of their vaccine status. If you are in contact with somebody and you're double vaxxed, if you test negative, you don't go into quarantine. But if you test negative and you're not vaxxed, you still go into quarantine, even if you test negative. The change, they say, follows a significant rise in Omicron cases in the UK. So what? Nobody's sick with it. Well, that's why we have to make it all about the test. And just so that you know, who's with the global government and who isn't? Again, LifeSite News, I reported this last week. I reported it, I guess, on Thursday and then or Wednesday. And then Dan Crenshaw came out and went on the offense, projecting his lies and his grifting onto people who had voted against unlimited spending in 2020. You know, people like Thomas Massey, who said, you're talking President Trump about spending between almost $4 trillion. I can't vote for that. So Dan Crenshaw says, you didn't support Trump. And Trump said that as well. Trump was furious with him. He said, I'm going to primary that guy and get him out. Remember that public attack against that? Because he stood up for fiscal conservatism. And you got other people in the House Freedom Caucus, the same way. Dan Crenshaw came out against them. He says, these people are accusing us of selling you out with an Immunization Infrastructure Modernization Act. That's the title of the bill, H.R. 550, that Dan Crenshaw and 80 Republicans voted for. Now, he needs to explain that it's not just the House Freedom Caucus that pushed back against it. 80 Republicans like Dan Crenshaw voted for it, and 140 Republicans voted against it, far more than is in the House Freedom Caucus. But Dan Crenshaw says, you're lying to people. We actually got them down on what they wanted. Oh, really? Yeah, they wanted $500 million. We only gave them $400 million to set up a database about your vaccination status. Oh, good job, Dan. Democrats light is what you are. Democrat light. Or maybe just a Democrat liar. And then he said, and we protected your anonymity. Except that the New Hampshire Democrat who sponsored the bill, who authored it, Annie Custer, said in a statement her legislation could be used, quote, to remind patients when they're due for a recommended vaccine and to identify areas with low vaccination rates. He denies that it could be used to identify people, but that's the purpose, said the author of the bill. So maybe Dan didn't read the bill. Or maybe Dan is a grifter and a liar himself. You need to understand who these people are. You need to understand who's on your side and who isn't. It's not anonymous if you're going to use this as a way to get people. And Sheriff Hathaway showed you the documentation weeks ago. I suspected, and I said, look at this, back in August of 2020, when the CDC was putting their questionnaire out, that they were going to put out all the different, you know, all the different drugstores that give you the shot, the fill-in stations that give you the shot, you know, the whole bit, that everybody had this form, and they were supposed to report it in just within, I think, 24 hours, every personal detail that you could imagine. And they said, well, it's just to remind you to come back and get your shot, which is the same thing she's saying right now. Oh, well, this is just to remind you that you're due for a recommended vaccine. Oh, wait a minute. You mean your booster? However many of those that they want to do, we then remind you, you haven't had your seventh booster yet. But I said at the time the CDC did that, back in August of 2020, I said there's a field there that says refused. Now, if I refused, I don't need to be reminded to come and get my second dosage. So they were lying then. They're lying now. Dan Crenshaw is lying to you right now. Americans are split on religious exemptions to the COVID-19 vaccine, says a study. You always have to look at this and say, who funded this? Who did the polling? Well, I don't know who these people are. Public Religion Research Institute and the Interfaith Youth Corps did this poll. So it sounds like it's coming from people who would support religious exemptions, but you can't always tell, right? Because we've had a lot of people that you would think would be concerned about the ethics of this and its connection with abortion, because it is connected with abortion. I encourage you, if you did not see the interview that I did with Julianne Colaraffi last week, her site, Fetal Industry. Is that correct, Travis? Yeah, fetalindustry.com. The research that she did up in Canada, and I had a lot of people say, well, you know, she gave a figure saying, I think it was 30,000 people in Saskatoon, in Saskatchewan, the province of Saskatchewan, in the small town of Saskatoon. And she said there's about as many abortion clinics there with a population that is far smaller. But it turns out, I've had a lot of people, listeners, say, I live there. That number, she got off by a factor of 10. But the point being is that even if it's 300,000 people, they've got the same number of abortion clinics that they have on Long Island with millions of people. It's a very high percentage, is the point she was making. And a very high percentage of, or should say, a high number of abortion clinics per capita. But the key thing out of that is that you understand they are doing these humanized mice experiments where they are murdering children, having them born alive so they can harvest their organs alive and create humanized mice. And those humanized mice are what are being used to create the next generation of flu vaccines, the universal flu vaccine, the holy grail for Fauci and his people of profit and of control. The universal annual flu vaccine has been what they have been gearing for with all of their lies at CDC on an annual basis, trying to scare people into getting the flu shot. That's why this thing was just a rerun of that. But they've got the annual mandatory universal flu vaccine they want everybody to get, and they're developing that right now, and they're using humanized mice, not a cell line, not an HEK cell line from 1963. These are newly murdered children that they're then creating transhumanized mice with, implanting the organs in the mice so they can do these tests to develop it. Just so you know, because that's coming up next. And when that comes up next, you're not going to have a discussion about these cell lines from 1963. By the way, when you talk about mandatory vaccines, many people have, and I had another listener send me a letter saying, and just want to give a shout out to the person who wrote that letter, saying that letter from the person in the military, laying out four different objections, said, I went along with that same idea, and I got my religious exemption. So yet another person. However, now we're at the stage, this is where a lot of them are going to come back. They're going to come after you, and they're going to say, to propagate this lie, well, you know, aspirin and everything else that you consume as a medical product was tested with these 1963 cell lines. Well, it wasn't developed that way. Even if they ran a test sometime in 1970 or 80, aspirin was created even before they patented it in the 1800s as aspirin and started selling it that way. It was a remedy that willow bark went back centuries ago. So it was not developed using the fetal cell line. That's a lie. And so you need to be careful of those tricks. That's what they're going to come at. They may come after you with a follow-up. Now, if you got your religious exemption, they may do that as a follow-up and try to interrogate you with that. So be aware of that. There's so many articles I need to do. I need to get on Substack because I need to do an article about the follow-up attack that's coming. And so you need to be aware of that and be ready to give an answer to that. But looking at this, what do Americans think according to this survey and this study? And again, they don't give an idea as to the details of how this poll was put together. You can rig a poll by, you know, you got a political poll where you ask one party predominantly and out of disproportion with the way they represent the population. You know, so if you want the Republicans to win, even if the Republicans are a minority, you ask more Republicans than the Democrats, and the Republicans can win your poll, that type of thing. They do that a lot. Various organizations do that in order to push you in a particular direction. Again, the ASH experiment primarily, oh, well, you know, most people think this, so why are you the outlier? Why do you disagree with most people? See this poll I've got? But here's what the poll said. 1 in 10 Americans say their religious teaching prevents them from taking the COVID vaccine, and 13% say the vaccine contradicts their religious beliefs. And so they make a distinction in this article between official church teachings and your beliefs or your conscience. Why? Why is there a difference there? Well, because you got people like the Pope, or you got people like Al Mohler at the Southern Baptist, who are telling people to blindly obey the government and all things, telling you to worship the Trump miracle vaccine. That's why. 51% of Americans favor allowing individuals who would otherwise be required to get vaccinated against the coronavirus to opt out if it violates their religious beliefs. Only 51%. That means 49%. Well, actually, it's 47%. 2% are undecided. 47% opposed religious liberty in America in 2021. Think about that. Think about that. It's astounding, isn't it? What our country was founded on, and it was founded on religious liberty. You know, you go back and you talk about Thanksgiving, you talk about the Mayflower Compact, or as they talked about it, they called it the Plymouth Combination. Mayflower Compact did not come along for another 160-170 years or something like that. So they saw it as a combination. We're going to, and it was striking because it was the first time people came together and voluntarily created a foundation for their government. And instead of having it imposed upon them by somebody in a position of power. And it was done by people who came here seeking religious liberty above all else. And so now we have rejected the foundations of our country completely and thoroughly, right? It's just hanging by a thread. 60% said there's no valid religious reason not to get vaccinated, and 59% of Americans argued that too many people are using this to forego vaccination. Not looking too good. Finally, before I take a break. Well, I am going to take a break, and then we're going to come right back and talk about the New World Orders, about Julian Assange, what is happening with that, updates on some headline news. The Second Amendment, Governor Newsom has declared now that he is going to, and his, it was actually U.S. Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, who said the way to get rid of a bad law is to rigorously enforce it, and he believes that by rigorously enforcing what he considers to be a bad Supreme Court decision, he's going to get rid of it. So we'll be right back and talk about that and these other issues. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Listener, send this to me, characterized it as a stomach-churning article, and it is. Klaus Schwab's School for COVID Dictators. Klaus Schwab, of course, the person who is, who runs Davos, who is putting out the Great Reset. And the listener, Kelly, says this is not a part of the article, but in a rare moment of transparency, Augustin Carstens, the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements, that's the central bank of the central banks, is the way they refer to it and themselves. This person, the general manager of that central bank of the central banks, general of the generals or the central of the centrals. Anyway, he said, in our analysis on CBDC, the central bank digital currency, in particular for general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. There is a huge difference, he said. For example, in cash, we don't know who is using a $100 bill today. We don't know who's using a $1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with a central bank digital currency is a central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank viability, and also we will have the technology to enforce that. And again, I'll just remind you that what they intend to do is to limit, by just cutting you off financially, what you're allowed to do or to buy. And they've already put together an agreement with MasterCard, and the UN and these other people have put together an agreement where they have set up the technology so that they can monitor. They'll assign some kind of an arbitrary, quote unquote, carbon value to everything that you do or buy. And so if you go to the grocery store and you want to buy a steak, I'm sorry, you've exceeded your carbon allowance and you are not going to be allowed to buy that. They will use that in terms of the amount of fuel that you use to go where, or your travel. That will be the way that they enforce this Great Reset, where you own nothing, you eat what they tell you to eat, and you go nowhere, that type of thing. It'll be run through the central bank digital currency. Catherine Austin Fitz, exactly spot on. This is the essence of how they control you is through the money. And that's one of the reasons why I focused on this emergency authorization 641 days ago. That released money that was given to governors, trillions of dollars, each of them getting tens of billions of dollars, many times what their state budget was, to be handed out as they saw fit. And now you look at who's going to be at the epicenter of this Great Reset. So we talked last week with Eric Peters. Pete Buttigieg has now been given $200 billion, more than any of these governors were given. That's even more than Fauci got from Trump. Not Fauci, but Newsom got from Trump. Even Newsom didn't get that. He got a lot. He went from like a $15 billion deficit to a $75 billion surplus, but he didn't get $200 billion. Buttigieg's got that, and he's using this to build a political network, a political empire for the future. They picked a guy who was a glib Marxist. They gave him $200 billion worth of funding, and he is now going around making those alliances, and he's going to use that money to basically destroy our infrastructure, but to build his infrastructure of political connections. And so when you look at this school for COVID dictators, this comes from the RAIR Foundation. And they show a picture of some of the people who have been selected as the young global leaders in their time. Some of them are now no longer young, but they were focused. People who were groomed by Klaus Schwab and the globalists at Davos include people like Angela Merkel, class of 1992, Gavin Newsom, class of 2005, Pete Buttigieg and Emmanuel Macron, people like Jeff Bezos, people like Bill Gates. Bill Gates was back there in 1993, like Angela Merkel. But of course, the more recent graduates are people like Ivanka Trump. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Richard Branson, many of these people. Chelsea Clinton with the Clinton Foundation, that's who they're grooming. And of course, you know, Chelsea Clinton and Ivanka Trump, they're soulmates, classmates, BFFs. Let's take a look at the new world orders, the new world orders. I got some new world orders for you. Yeah. So we've got over the weekend, we had a lot of protests Let's go to Melbourne first, because in Melbourne, you had thousands in many different cities across Australia, but in Melbourne, this is what it looked like. Reclaim freedom. For those of you who are listening, sign do not comply, solidarity. Big, big crowd carrying Australian flags. Good for them. Good for them. Stand up. Be counted. Peacefully drumming and marching. It goes on. We had.
So we might have to travel through the dark. But one thing about traveling through the dark is that eventually there is always a dawn. We just have to hold on through the darkness to reach it. And the best thing we have to hold on with is each other.
God did not give me a spirit of fear, said
Dan Andrews. Dan Andrews.
Dictator Dan. Okay, you get the idea. And this sad story, which came out about an Aboriginal leader who died in one of their concentration camps.
This is an update for the elderly lady who died in the quarantine center in Darwin. I've just got off the phone to Uncle Keith Rory. Uncle Keith Rory is a senior lawman and the leader for all four clan groups from the Borroloola region. Uncle Keith has informed me that the family were begging the quarantine centre from 7:30 in the morning to please get assistance for their mother, their auntie, their elder. They were begging them for assistance the entire day. They got no assistance. Nobody came to help. They were telling him that she was having pain in her arms and pain in her chest. And they were pleading for help. And nobody assisted until about 7 p.m. that night. So more than 12 hours later, she collapsed. And that's when they scrambled to assist. And whatever the government puts out is absolute lies. This old lady was kept in there for over 2 weeks and she didn't need to be there. She was longing to be home, and she was pleading for assistance, and the family were screaming for assistance the entire day, and they did not react, and they did not help. And the owners of that facility, the Northern Territory government, and everybody involved is liable for that murder. And that's what it is, because these mandates aren't lawful. They don't have the right to be ripping our people off country and doing what they're doing, let alone detaining them, putting them through stress and duress. She did not have the... she had tests and did not have the COVID, and she was vaccinated. And the family is very distraught. They're giving me permission to go public, and I'm going to be interviewing more people, and I'll be putting out public statements as soon as I can.
Okay, so you have an example there that's a little bit different from the medical murder that's happened. I call it murder now. It's not just financially incentivized malpractice with this emergency order 641 days ago. No, they actually do murder people. Withholding effective and cheap treatment from them. You had a doctor that I talked about last week. He said, I came up with this protocol, and it was stuff that was effective. And he said, we only had about 10% of the people. After they were very, very, very sick going into the hospital, he would begin treating them. And he only had 10% fatality rate. But he said they came after him. They tried to humiliate him publicly. They got his publication pulled. And then they told him, you will use remdesivir now and none of this other stuff that was safe, effective, and inexpensive. He said, I gave it to 7 patients. And I watched all of them die. And that was it. And he sued them. That doctor did. And 2 of the patients who died, one was in 30s. The other one was in their 40s, otherwise healthy. So that is a kind of murder, isn't it? But in this particular case, as you just heard from that guy, this is someone who was elderly, kidnapped and put in a quarantine camp because they were in, quote unquote, close contact with somebody else, not testing positive herself at all. She was double vaxxed, or they say double vaxxed. Anyway, she's vaccinated. And she had no symptoms, and she had no positive test, and yet they refused to give her medical treatment because you're not going to leave this camp. I mean, that's how bad that is. I showed you last week. You don't cross this line, or we're going to give you a $5,000 fine. You mean that right there? They all nod. Yeah, you don't cross that line. Boris Johnson apparently has crossed the line. This whole Christmas party thing from last year is just getting worse and worse for him. As more and more information, more and more videos of their Christmas party last year when they told everybody else there's going to be no mixing and you're going to stay home. They were partying at number 10 Downing Street. So he has now been accused of personally breaking COVID laws by hosting a Christmas quiz at number 10 last year. And they show him sitting underneath a portrait of Margaret Thatcher as he read out questions, quizzing people. Well, now the people of the UK have got some questions for Bojo. And here's a protest that happened over the weekend. Good crowd turnout. Good crowd turnout, yep. Some lawyers have suggested that number 10 could... who is number one, right? You are number six. That number 10 could somehow be exempt from the COVID regulations because it is crown property. Oh, yeah, the queen is not subject to any regulations, right? And so if number 10 is crown property, then they can do whatever they want as soon as they get inside. It's masks off, party on. Well, it looks like he's facing a rave, and they're going to have a big electronica pumping music all night party, and they've got about 500,000 people who said, we're definitely coming. And another 500,000 people say, we're thinking about it. So we'll see what happens there. In Brussels, this is what it looked like over the weekend. People are waking up everywhere to the fact that we have a global government now. It doesn't matter which country, doesn't matter what supposed party is in power, or which supposed politician is in power. They have all betrayed us to their globalist masters. And that goes on for quite some time. You can see, though, how big that crowd is. Look at that shot there. You can see way down the street, as far as you can see, in two different directions. You've got a massive number of people out there in the streets. Now, he's also Boris Johnson. I love this picture. See if you can pull up this picture, Travis. Breitbart's got this. Boris Johnson faces party mutiny over COVID restrictions. And they got a picture of him that, you know, he had somebody standing there with a bicycle, with a camera. He's on a bicycle riding toward them. There it is. Thank you. Zoom in on that picture of Bojo. And he's wearing a suit and tie and a little bicycle helmet. And he's riding his bicycle, and he shakily takes one hand off to wave to the person going the opposite direction. And I look at this, and I look at Boris Johnson. And it's just as a casual, occasional observer of British politics. I say, is this guy, has he made his being kind of a doofus clown, is that his little, you know, British people love idiosyncrasies. And is that really kind of his bid to make himself lovable? Yeah, I'm an amiable dunce, but I'm affable. You know, that's great. And well, he's got his plan B. New restrictions, he calls Plan B. Well, I think they need another plan that doesn't include Boris. Includes mandatory mask wearing in England and most public indoor settings, implementation of domestic vaccine passports for large events, and guidance telling people that they should work from home. The WHO and the CDC are now saying, you know, see, zero Omicron deaths in the world. I told you, if a single person died, anywhere in the world, no matter how remote or how crowded, if a single person had died, you better believe it would be headline news on Fox, on CNN. Drudge would have it up with a flashing alarm symbol. But, you know, not a single person not a single person. And we have now more purported videos, although I can't verify when the video was done, of nurses walking around, just like we had the one from Brazil that I showed earlier this year. A nurse going, somebody following them with a camera, and they're going throughout the entire hospital, opening up doors and showing that all of the beds are empty. Supposedly it's coming from Germany, where they say, oh, yeah, we got all these Omicron cases. No, nobody is. Nobody died. Nobody died. Where's Steve Pachinik when we need him? You know, selling that BS that he does at every one of these mass shootings. Nobody died. Nobody. Well, Steve, why don't you come up and say nobody died about Omicron? Well, you won't do that, will you? No. No, that's not part of the plan for the people you work for. Big Pharma will make Omicron-specific booster shots, even though they're not needed, says Fauci. So he goes on one of the Sunday shows. I'm sorry, this is on Friday, before the Sunday shows. With Omicron, we got to wait and see because we got very little information. We may need to have a fourth dose faster, as I pointed out before. But he said, when asked about that, he said, well, you know, it may not be needed, but we'll have to ask Pfizer if they want us to buy it, right? No, he didn't say that. But he said, Pfizer is going to be making variant-specific boosters. So they're going to make a booster just for Omicron. And he's going to make you inject it, whatever it is. And, you know, the government will buy it from them. This title here, you know, from American Thinker, when science mixes with politics, all we get is politics. You know, it works that way with religion as well, right? That's why you don't mix those two. And when you mix, and I'll say this, when science mixes with politics, all you get is politics. When science mixes with religion, all you get is politics. But I would also say that when science mixes with politics, science becomes religion, doesn't it? You can quote me on that. We can make that a T-shirt. It's one of the things that bothers me, though, about this all this God talk that you see Flynn and AJ doing. You know, they're going around doing these voting. You know, they're still raising money off of the election last year, which Trump could have stopped the allegations of fraud because of a mail-in election where they mailed the ballots. We should call it a mail-out fraud, right? Because we've always had a situation where you could have legitimate reasons to do absentee ballots. But they got rid of all the verification, and they started mailing out ballots to everybody. And so you had people who were getting ballots from multiple jurisdictions. And, you know, you can vote early and vote often. And so that's the real fraud, the mail-out ballots. But all of that could have been stopped by Trump. He could have stopped the whole necessity of having mail-in elections if he would have held the rallies that he wouldn't hold and the conventions that he didn't want to hold, the mask. His people were up for it. They would have come. You know, Democrats weren't going to do that. And everybody would have said, we're all going to die. But he could have had these big rallies, and the big rallies could have been like the churches that met and showed that there's nothing going on. Could be like the SEC football games that I reported last week, where you got every week, you got hundred thousand people showing up and nobody's dying. They could have pushed this back just by some leadership, But what he did was he led us in the direction that Fauci wanted us to be led. But when you look at what's happening, it's just stunning to me. They still have people like Michael Flynn, whose website is still all about election fraud. Send me some money, and I'll investigate the election fraud. Well, after a year of this, we're now going, you know, 13 months of this, Flynn is still raising money off of that. And they're still going around with this, you know, every month or so. They're going to some big mega church. This last weekend, they were up at a church in Frisco, Texas. This church, the most incredible stench I've ever seen in God's nostril, to spend $25 million on this gothic glass and steel building. And it's nothing but an ego trip for this pastor who preaches prosperity gospel. And so they all turn up there with their traveling election show. And you got Flynn and you got Alex and I don't know all the different, probably Roger's there as well. And because they're meeting on a regular basis in these giant mega churches that have prostituted themselves, they're up there doing God talk. Like Flynn said, well, if we're going to be one nation under God, we better have one religion. Has absolutely no idea what this country is about. This is a guy who is pushing for a civil war, and he has put himself in opposition to our Constitution and the First Amendment. When you mix politics with religion, you get politics. That's what you get. And that's exactly what's going on there. By the way, he never did clarify that. He never did say which religion he wanted it to be. I mean, is it going to be secular humanism? Is it going to be the religion of the vaccine? Oh, yeah, you could unify everybody under that, couldn't you? So you have a clinical psychologist, yet another one, who is warning of totalitarianism as an atrocity resulting from the mass COVID buy-in. This is a different psychologist than Dr. Mark McDonald, who I've interviewed, who talked about fear. You remember the United States of Fear? A great interview if you haven't seen that. That's the name of his book, The United States of Fear, talking about how this is a clinical psyop that's being run on people. As this particular psychologist talking about, not Dr. Mark McDonald, said the so-called public health crisis, you have, think about this, ritualistic hand-washing. It's a religion, right? This is coming from LifeSite News. It really is a religion. They have ritualistic hand-washing. They have special garments that they wear, masks, right? And they have an initiation rite, baptism. Vaccination is their baptism into this new religion. If you stop and think about it. Welcome to the new world religion. We can have one world under one religion if we're not careful. You have Dr. Harvey Reich, a Yale epidemiologist, and he is talking about the pandemic of fear as well. He said, manufactured by the authorities. He said, this epidemiology professor, who is a member of the board of editors for the American Journal of Epidemiology. He suggested that this Yale epidemiologist suggested that individuals who held nominal positions of authority during the onset of the pandemic in March 2020 initially spread a much worse picture of the dire nature of the virus than was warranted. Now, that's true. That's true. And it's individuals who held nominal positions of authority. It's also people who held big positions of authority, but it's also people in the media who held positions of information, pushing Wuhan, 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 as I was saying earlier, you know, scaring people. And I said, regardless, I said, even if this is a deliberately engineered and released bioweapon, you need to have society functioning and people making quick decisions instead of centralized control. Centralized control, guess what, doesn't work very well for emergencies because they can't respond to what is happening. In an emergency, it's even more essential for us to have decentralized and adaptive processes so we can learn which approaches work and which ones don't. That's the way you protect the greater good. You have people take different approaches, and they're watching what the other people are doing, and they're doing something different. Everybody does what they think is going to be the best way to respond to a real emergency. And then you see what happens. And one of my sons did a contest where he compared and won a contest doing a video comparing the way FEMA with their top-down command, control, central control of a hurricane that hit the coast of North Carolina. He contrasted and compared that to a tornado that was more localized. I know we had big, big tornadoes over this last weekend, but this particular case, it was a tornado that was localized to one town, did a tremendous amount of damage to it there in North Carolina. So he took those two cases. In the case where it was a tornado, the federal government with its central control and FEMA did not get involved. Instead, you had local law enforcement immediately turn out and keep people away from down power lines. You had businesses send in massive amounts of food. They sent the food trucks into the parking lots of the churches, and the people in the churches showed up and handed out the food for free to people. Things recovered very, very quickly there. Contrast that to the coast, where the government came in with a heavy centralized hand, and they are responsible for more people trying to ride out the storm because people have seen what they do to keep you out of the area. And so they were not allowed to go back in and clean up or protect their property from looters or other things, and they were essentially made homeless because FEMA just cut off all access to the Outer Banks and wouldn't let them go out there. That's why you don't want to have a centralized control. Even in a real emergency, it's more important to have decentralized. It works better if you've got a market because you've got this, you know, goes back to iPencil, goes back to the idea that no matter how smart somebody is, they don't have sufficient information. And we want to have, especially in a dangerous emergency situation, multiple things being tried so we can see what works and what doesn't. And when you see that everybody's not dying in Florida, then in a rational society, you would have people like Newsom and Whitmer say, oh, okay, well, you know, I don't need to do what I'm doing. But they're not doing that for medical reasons. They're not doing it for scientific reasons. They're doing it for political reasons. Because when you mix politics with science, you get politics. South Korea is well along the way of what the globalists want. South Korea cuts human interaction in a push to build the untacked society. I guess that is supposedly the opposite of an intact society, to make it come apart at the seams. And of course, the seams and the glue that holds a society together are human relationships, especially the family. That's disappearing. They say, at the university library, I would reserve my books online, which would then be sanitized in a book sterilizer before being delivered to a locker for pickup, said a 25-year-old. Untacked has made many aspects of life so convenient. And so it was introduced in 2020. Untacked is a South Korean government policy that aims to spur economic growth by removing human interaction from society. And it just happened to come along at the same time that the pandemic. Isn't that serendipitous? Well, I reported years ago, it was 4 or 5 years ago at least, there was a South Korean poll, not a poll, but a projection. They didn't ask the general public. They talked to some experts who had probably been coached by Davos. And they said by 2030, always 2030, by 2030, we expect that a little over 50% of the transportation industry will be gone, replaced by artificial intelligence and robotics. But then they had certain fields like medicine and law, the doctors and the lawyers. They said, we think 70% of them will be gone. We'll replace them with robots and with artificial intelligence. And so they've been pushing this 2030 agenda in South Korea very, very hard, eagerly anticipating a future that does not need us and does not have us in it. That's really what Davos is pushing. If more people lose the feeling of contact due to a lack of face-to-face interaction, society will encounter a fundamental crisis, said a sociology professor at one of the universities there, who was one of the few people pushing back on this. But see, all of this is that way. You see this 25-year-old say, oh, this is great. I can order the book I want. They sanitize it, and it's not touched by human hands. You see this happening in the restaurants where people are afraid to have human servers. And put the stuff on a sanitized platter and give it to me, and then I want it prepared by robots and on and on and on. They keep pushing more and more humans out of the chain of events. That's why I'm happy to see, even here in Austin, you're starting to see, in most cases, the masks coming off of the servers. They're still doing it at places like Chick-fil-A, unfortunately, on the inside. But there's other places. You go to most of the restaurants and they don't do that anymore. We went through that period of transition where they were saying, well, customers don't have to wear them, but all the servers still have to work that way. But that's another way to break human contact, to cover the face and then to isolate people. South Korea also has the world's lowest fertility rate, and I'm sure that Klaus Schwab and these the Davos crowd, you know, people like Angela Merkel and Bezos and Gates and Ivanka and Chelsea, they're all very happy about that. And Buttigieg is a part of that class there. The world's lowest fertility rate is about to get even lower. South Korea said its fertility rate, already the world's lowest, is expected to drop as the pandemic is putting downward pressure on the number of births. It's the pandemic. It's not the government. It's not these psychological programs. It's the pandemic. And finally, as we look at this lockdown and the emergencies and the COVID and the tactics that they're using, California is hiding $300 billion a year in spending from the public. They say it's for the people's own good. This is an article you'll find on Zero Hedge from the CEO and founder of an organization called OpenTheBooks.com, originally published on Forbes. In 2018, California resident Stephen Childs wanted to know how much the state paid to a single vendor over a five-year period. Childs asked more questions, and instead of the data, the California controller, Betty Yee, sent him an invoice for $1,250. I'm not going to answer your question, but here's a charge. They kept asking questions. And finally, the controller's chief counsel, the lawyer, Rick Chavarro, admitted that the state held electronic records and warrant records akin to maintaining a checking account online. Today, in a Sacramento Superior Court, the controller denies having a checkbook and claims that the warrant register doesn't contain vendor information. The Golden State would be the only state in the nation not to produce state spending under open record laws. So typically what they do, when we've had a situation 30 years ago when I was working with the Libertarian Party, I did the newsletter for them, and we're trying to get some information from the government, the state government, about a particular program and how much money was being spent on it. And, you know, we requested the information. And the way they usually do this is what they did to us. They gave us, we asked for a needle, and they gave us a haystack. And they said, somewhere in that haystack is a needle, but you have to find it. They gave us all of the stuff. I mean, massive amounts of data, and it's like, go fish. You can't. So they just bury it. And all that stuff. So, yeah, we complied with it, and, you know, and here it is. And we're not going to tell you how to find it or where to find it. You can go look for it yourself. That's typically what they do. That's a very effective way of complying and hiding at the same time. But in California, they've become so arrogant, they don't even bother with that. They just say, we're not giving that to you. Same way that the FDA and the Department of Justice is saying, we're not going to give you the records that we did to test the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. We're not going to give that to you for 75 years. That type of thing. So the California controller, Yee, is claiming that her office, quote, couldn't locate a single payment. No, that's not fake news. That's not a comedy punchline. California's top financial officer actually argued this in court recently, despite admitting that she paid 50 million individual bills last year. Well, she's obviously stressed out. She paid 50 million bills. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App,
Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. All right, and I was saying earlier, I want to talk about a couple of letters that I got from listeners. This is from a family, and I don't have a first name, so I won't mention this came in the mail. So I won't mention the last name. I don't want to get anybody in any trouble. That's the world that we live in right now. But they said, at your advice, we're happy to report that our family member filed and was granted a religious exemption. And so I'm guessing that they were helped with those templates that I've talked about, one in particular that we put up. So I just want to pass that on. And also in the mail, I got a something from someone who was anonymous, and that's really kind of the world that we live in, isn't it? That's enough of a commentary about what America is. And so this individual knows what's going on. He said, I was going to do a donation InfoWars, and my analysis, I wondered, where is David Knight? So he said he was able to find my missing tooth video. I guess that was like the first one I did. I had a tooth that was broken, and I had to start the broadcast. I really do appreciate those of you who have been standing with us for this last year and the encouragement that you gave me to continue on with this. And many of the early contributors who just sent a donation to help at Christmas time have been faithfully there this entire time. I can't thank you enough. I really do appreciate that. But anyway, he said, so I'm giving David Knight an early Christmas gift. Prepay your utilities for the coming economic mess. Make sure you and your family are Renaissance people because it's going to get interesting. Yeah, as we're looking at this move, keep looking at, what can we do? The difficult thing, my instinct, and I think the correct thing to do, is to try to get out of debt as much as possible with a rapid increase in property values that's happened over the last couple of years, especially the last year or so with inflation. We have some equity that we could get out of that, and if we start small. But then the problem is that, having to try to build something, and that's going to take a while, and then it becomes an issue with the broadcast and an issue of, trying to get remote where we've got property, but then having internet access at the same time. It's these two things we're having difficulty reconciling those things to each other. But he goes on to say, I don't subscribe to anybody's feed. I don't have YouTube or Twitter accounts. So he said, please keep your podcast videos free without a paywall. If you wish, delay the uploads days or weeks to reward subscribers. That is one of the things that we've done is to try to activate ads on the podcast. And hopefully people don't find three ads in 1 hour to be too much. But that does help. And so we've moved the stuff over there. I'm trying to find a way to, and it's tricky because even though I know I can give stuff to subscribers on Subscribestar and give, I would like to try to give people the podcast without any commercials because some people are put off by that. And so I'd like to make it available. It's kind of the way Pandora does. I mean, Pandora, you can listen to their service for free, and occasionally they pause the music and they give you a commercial. Or you can, pay for the subscription, which is like $5 or $10 a month or something like that. And you can get it without any commercial interruptions. And so I think people are kind of used to commercial interruptions from watching television. But for the people who have supported us, I'd like to be able to get that to them. I'm not sure what we'll be able to do with Subscribestar. We might be able to break it into, I don't know how small segments we'd have to break it into because it won't take that audio file on Subscribestar. So maybe if we break it up into multiple, into 1 hour chunks or half hour chunk or something, it might take it. We haven't tried that yet to see what the limit is, but that still wouldn't do anything for the people who are sending money in via other means. And so, we're still looking at that. Of course, it does go up without commercials and stays there on Twitter and on DLive. It stays for 3 days. On Twitter, it's always there for right now. So it's live and archived on Twitter forever, on DLive for 3 days without commercials. And we do put up the video at several different video websites, as well as we cut out some parts for it. I had been doing the breakdown by time, different subjects, since it's a three-hour broadcast. I like to give people a time code where different topics begin. And that's shifted that a little bit because of the insertion of commercials. But it still works for the video feeds. So that's kind of where we are right now. So give me some feedback as to what you think about that, if it's an issue. And he says, lastly, consider reading The Sovereign Individual, Mastering the Transition in the Information Age. Well, I haven't read that book. I'll take a look at it. It's by Lord Rees-Mogg and James Davidson. James Davidson was the founder of the National Taxpayer Union, or I think it was what that was. Yeah, National. It was a taxpayers union. And interestingly enough, I used to subscribe to him years ago. He had an investment newsletter back in the 90s. I subscribed to him. It's one of the reasons why Karen and I went to New Zealand to think about moving there, basically, because James Davidson was really big on New Zealand. I'm sure glad I'm not there right now under Jacinda Ardern. I kind of when we went there, I got a vibe that there was like a Jacinda Ardern right underneath the surface there, and that could be very, very dangerous. As a matter of fact, I met with some libertarians. They had a guy who had a very popular show, a national radio show there in New Zealand. They called him the Rush Limbaugh of New Zealand. And so I'd set up a meeting with him and some other people when we went down there. And he didn't make the meeting, but the other people did. And we spent the whole time at lunch comparing notes as to who lived under a more authoritarian government. And they convinced me that their government was worse at the time than the U.S. government was. And that was back in 1998. And then finally, he sent me this little card, which we used to give people a lot. We had a lot of these printed up in the Libertarian Party. This is not a tip. It's a gift. And then as part of it, it has the you can see that little diamond shape thing there. That's the Nolan chart and the political quiz there. So we'd give people that as well as the say, you know, leave something for a waitress. Say, this isn't a tip. This is a gift. And you can get a lot of money out of a gift, and you don't have to report that as income. So anyway, thank you so much to the people who have stood by us over this last year as we're starting to come up to the close to the one-year anniversary. Thank you so much for that. Let's talk a little bit about toxic meds. And let's begin, as a matter of fact, with what is happening with professional athletes. This little 30-second video, I'll just show you all these people passing out and various, all these athletes passing out in various places as I'm talking about this. We had one of the most recent ones, a female soccer player, Cadigan, 26, died suddenly, quote, in non-suspicious circumstances, said the Daily Mail. Yet anytime a young person, not the least of all, a healthy star athlete dies unexpectedly, there is some inherent element of suspicion involved. Maybe not in a criminal sense, but you should be suspicious from at least a medical point of view, don't you think? Moreover, had her premature death, the cause of which has not been disclosed, if it had been an isolated event, then it could be chalked up as something of a tragic fluke. But it appears that her sudden death was not isolated. Was part of a disturbing trend in the world of sports. You saw that little clip there, some of those. Last month, three professional athletes stricken by health emergencies in the same week. Football player for Wigan Athletic, Charlie Wick, 28, suffered cardiac arrest during a scrimmage. Days later, John Fleck, 30, a player with Sheffield United, carried off the field on a stretcher during a championship game against Reading. In late October, Barcelona player Sergio Aguero, 33, considered one of the best strikers today, had his dazzling career cut short after being diagnosed with cardiac arrhythmia following a match. On November the 1st, Icelandic midfielder Emil Paulsson, 28, required resuscitation after cardiac arrest 12 minutes into play. I mean, these are guys, typically, think about soccer. They don't have an offensive team and a defensive team. And these guys go the entire hour of play. And it is pretty much continuous. They don't stop except when it goes out of bounds. They stop to throw the thing back in. So, I mean, these guys are running all the time. So that's why this is so unusual. And yet the media says there's nothing to see here. This is rare. No, it's not. On June the 12th, Denmark midfielder Christian Eriksen, 29, who had been named the Danish Football Player of the Year a record five times, suffered a heart attack at the Euro 2020 contest, given cardiopulmonary resuscitation. He announced his retirement from the sport after being fitted with an implantable cardioverter defibrillator to regulate his heartbeat. Do any of these health emergencies prove that the mandated COVID vaccines were to blame? Well, no. But are we to just dismiss it as a coincidence? Don't ask, don't tell, don't investigate, I would say. This is, by the way, an article from the Strategic Culture Foundation. And they quote, and that's what Reuters says. Well, you know, it's nothing to see here, especially as we embrace and wait for a possible wave of Omicron. Give me a break. This is not something that happened with COVID. This is something that's happening with the vaccine. Vaccine is the most dangerous thing we have out there. In my 19 years as a pro football player, said ex-footballer Kevin Gage, and then in my 20-plus years watching and commenting, I've never seen any, and he emphasizes that, any players collapse, pass out, etc., either live or during any of those thousands of training sessions and matches that I've taken part in. Former England star Trevor Sinclair said the same thing. He says, I think everybody wants to know if Fleck has had the COVID vaccine. Nine Chicago Bulls players are now out, and they are postponing games. The Bull outbreak. Yeah, see, you get your seatbelt, but now you're getting breakthroughs of the seatbelt. Pfizer documents reveal a variety of vaccine side effects. As I pointed out last week, 160,000 adverse reactions in the initial months of the rollout, just in January and February. But we can't see the data that was used by the FDA to do an emergency authorization for 75 years because they didn't use any data. They did the emergency authorization as they began the program a year ago this weekend because Trump said so. He said, do it or you're fired. So we could just make it this really short. They don't need to give us a 500,000 pages or whatever it turns out to. Just show us the memo from Trump. Do this or you're fired. Critics say that some of these deaths cannot be conclusively linked to the vaccine, while others argue that the true number of deaths and adverse effects is underreported. So, as I said, they play all types of games with the statistics, as they love to say, well, you know, look at this vaccine effectiveness. We have people, it's very rare for somebody who's vaccinated to die with this. It's all the unvaccinated. And yet, as we look at the way they define the data, you see that if somebody dies before 2 weeks after the second dose, soon it'll be the third dose. That's another thing that's going to help them, right? But if you are not, by their definition, fully vaxxed, and that means 2 weeks after the second dose right now, then you died unvaccinated. And we're going to take a look at all these cause deaths, and we're going to do that. That's why I say arguing details of these people when they play with definitions like that, arguing the details of people who have been gaslighted and brainwashed and propagandized by the mainstream media and by government experts and authorities, just ask them, if the vaccines work, then what is going on? 7 times higher death risk. That's what's going on for young people, say experts in Japan. And then take a look what is happening to these newly born babies. This story came out Friday afternoon. A baby of a fully vaccinated mother dies shortly after birth, born bleeding from the mouth and nose. And that's in the VAERS report. But of course, you know, since we do have a government database to collect all this stuff, The CDC wants us to disregard that as fake news, the very database that they run, showing that we have more of these types of things, regardless of what category you look at. Now, it's more than all the other vaccines for the last 30-plus years combined. The doctor said that after the patient was born, this baby, there was a cry. When the umbilical cord was cut for newborn care, the nursing staff found that the patient had symptoms of oral and nose bleeding and immediately asked the pediatrician to intubate and to give him oxygen, and he was admitted to the intensive care unit and then died. Ontario Member of Parliament Rick Nichols goes before Parliament and asks why 86 stillbirths of fully vaccinated mothers have occurred. And, of course, in the vaccine database that the CDC runs, there are 2,893 fetal deaths now. They keep going up rapidly because they are pushing it harder and harder, this untested vaccine. They continue to push it harder and harder for pregnant women. Rick Nichols, Member of Parliament for Ontario, said in the Waterloo area, 86 stillbirths have occurred from January to July. And normally, it is roughly one every 2 weeks. But here's the kicker. Mothers of stillbirth babies were fully vaccinated, and you have clearly said on numerous occasions that the vaccines are safe. So, Minister, what do you say to the doctors who told expecting women it was okay to get fully vaccinated? And what should they tell the mothers who deliver a stillborn baby? Well, as Vaccine Impact points out, the minister that he was questioning, Christine Elliott, did not answer the question, of course. Instead, gave the standard vaccine cult religious answer, which is to appeal to authority. She said, it is safe. It has been tested. We're recommending that women who are pregnant do receive the vaccine for the protection of themselves and the protection of the baby as well. So they want to tell you that the mother can pass along antibodies to the kid, and that's true. But it also means that the mother can pass along the toxic protein spike to the kids. And it has a far greater effect on them. And can also pass along the mRNA that causes the child's body to start reproducing these protein spikes to attack it while it is still developing and does not have a mature immune system anyway. It has been proven, said Christine Elliott, it has been accepted by Health Canada, by the World Health Organization, by the FDA. Trump calls it a miracle, she might add. The FDA panel has endorsed a lower dose Moderna COVID shot for the booster. Now, I find this to be interesting. This is coming from Associated Propaganda, AP. They call it Associated Press. What they're doing is they're giving a half dose for the booster. The kiddie doses that they just recently approved for 5 to 12-year-olds are a half dose, 50 milligrams instead of 100 milligrams. So for 13, you know, from 12 to 13, that magic number, all of a sudden your dosage goes up by a factor of 2. And so instead of getting a 50 milliliter, you get a 100. And now, coincidentally, and it is a very convenient coincidence, as they're mass producing the reduced dosage for the kiddies, they're also mass producing the boosters in the same dosage. Isn't that convenient? I mean, if I was working at Pfizer or Moderna, I'd be very happy if I was working in the manufacturing facility because I wouldn't have to keep track of two different concentrations. I could just, let's make them all 50 now and put them out. And think about that. You got people who had two doses of 100 milliliters and it didn't work. And so now you're going to boost them with one dose of 50 milliliters, half the amount that you already gave them, you know, a quarter of the amount that they've already had. And that's supposed to do the trick. Yeah. Now, there's no science in this except for psychology. But isn't that amazing? It's the same dosage for the kids. Now, dosage is important, and that's one of the things, if there was a real test, they would have played around with the dosage. over a period of time and observe to see what the side effects are. Because the difference between, many cases, food or the difference between medicine is the dosage. Even if you have something like water, now I've mentioned this before, you've had situations, I remember one in particular, where people would die from having too much water. The way it worked in one of these instances was they had a radio station, had a contest, and they thought it'd be funny to make people drink water and then keep them from going to the bathroom while they're answering questions and stuff like that. And it killed a lady who was, I think she was in her 30s. She died because she had too much water, diluted her blood, and it was fatal. So you can have too much water and you can die. So in many cases, it's the dosage that is toxic of something, which is one of the reasons why it ought to raise eyebrows, the fact that everybody is getting the same dosage as an adult. That's why you have the Green Bay Packer football player and his wife, who probably weighed about one-third of his body weight. They both got the shot, and she got MLS-type paralysis symptoms, and it didn't bother him at all because she got quite a bit higher dosage. That's why I've said for the longest time, if you want to talk about fluoride in the water, it absolutely makes no sense to put anything in the water because you can't adjust the dosage of that. How do you, you know, you're going to have a different dosage, you would think, for an adult male versus, you know, a four-year-old. And how do you make that kind of adjustment if you're going to dump your so-called medication into the water? And if you dump it in the water, how do you know what medication anybody's getting? You don't. But we have a story that came out of, wait for it, New Zealand. A man takes 10 shots of COVID, they say, in a single day. In a single day. Oh. How did that work? And he's still doing fine. I mean, you know, we got all the reports about Gavin Newsom, and a lot of people said he had Guillain-Barré syndrome. He got over it after a couple of weeks. That's why you didn't see him for a couple of weeks, because he got the COVID booster and then he got a flu shot right away and he had a reaction to it. Well, that would be pretty easy to understand. And when you look at this and you say, well, this guy was vaccinated against COVID-19, is a story coming out of New Zealand, up to 10 times in just one day, and it has sparked an investigation. Now, I'm calling fake news on this because, first of all, I think that he would have had a reaction with that. But secondly, they're not giving any details. They won't even say where in New Zealand this happened. So they're saying, we're going to look at this and we're going to bring charges against this guy because he's hoarding this thing that is so valuable that everybody wants it. And it's so safe that you can have 10 times the dosage in a single day. Yeah, I'm calling BS on that. By the way, Jacinda Ardern, you know, one of the people that went to the Davos Young Leadership Conference, decided that she'd go on social media and interact with people. And then this happened.
Amanda, I'm sorry you're over me, but you don't have to stay on my Facebook Live if I'm bothering you. I'm sure there's many other things you could do with your time that you find less irritating.
Yeah, that's right there. She's talking about that. It says, I am so over you. It's really got to her. So much so that evidently she's moving out in terms of stepping up the propaganda. You know, we had Trump, while he was there, funded $250 million worth of propaganda through the Ad Council. That's why you get all these people, these so-called influencers on YouTube getting interviews with Fauci. Yeah, they get paid for that. People getting paid to do this dirty work, this propaganda. Here's what Jacinda Ardern said about their propaganda moves in New Zealand.
We've also seen the spread of misinformation on COVID-19, particularly through social media. We had to act, so we made it a priority to establish a public interest journalism fund to help our media continue to produce stories that keep New Zealanders informed.
Yeah, they're now become publishers. Yeah. We're going to tell you, we're going to shut down anybody that disagrees with us, and then we're going to run a massive propaganda organization. Speaking of propaganda, take a look at this picture. This is from New York, and its sign says, vaccination this way. And there you've got this, it's like the Statue of Liberty because, you know, it's got this is New York, Statue of Liberty. They take that as one of their symbols. And so it's got all these spikes coming out of the head, you know, like the Statue of Liberty profile. It's just a whited out, it's a silhouette there in white. But the Statue of Liberty is there with a very prominent green mask over her face and then flexing her arm muscles and kind of a got big bulging biceps like Arnold Schwarzenegger and a Band-Aid on there. And so it's like this way. So I guess that's kind of a trans Statue of Liberty, you know, transgender, trans, transgender, but also trans liberty or trans tyrant. This is a libertarian icon, Statue of Liberty, that is now identifying as both a tyrant and the female who is identifying as a male. Kind of an interesting combination there of those two things. Finally, we're going to see more and more of these articles talking about how wonderful genetic modification is. You know, first we heard it's not modifying the genes, even though they said on Moderna, we're reprogramming your body. We are reprogramming your body so that you will make the vaccine. We're turning your body into a vaccine manufacturing facility. Well, no, we're not reprogramming you at all, would say the mainstream media, even though they admitted that they were. But now you're seeing all these different new drugs that are being worked on. And they're telling you that, whatever the situation is, they're going to modify the people who've got bad genes, and they're going to fix them for us. So this latest story that you'll see on RT, Japanese scientists, they say, have developed a vaccine. Why a vaccine? Why not put it in a pill form, right? Because now they're talking about putting this mRNA stuff in a pill form or many other different types of forms. Maybe you can eat it. All this other kind of stuff. But no, if they call it a vaccine, then they've got no liability. So the Japanese scientists have developed a vaccine to target so-called zombie cells that pile up over time and damage healthy cells. These cells are thought to be responsible for a range of age-related ailments such as heart disease. So you can get a vaccine, and wait for it, with a vaccine, you can live forever and never age. There it is. That's the lie that they keep telling everybody. That's the original satanic lie from the Garden of Eden. We'll be right back.
Emergency! Everybody to get from street!
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. All right. This was just handed to me. The Tapa Drudge, I told you earlier in the program, I said there haven't been any deaths worldwide anywhere, not in Outer Mongolia, not in the inner sanctums of any of the EU. But now, and this is the Tapa Drudge, what did I say? I said, if they can ever claim that there's one person that died from this, it will be at the Tapa Drudge. And it's coming from the fake Daily Beast. The Daily Beast, these are the people who, look at that. The vaxxed in Philadelphia now have to eat out. So, yeah, there you go. But the world's first Omicron death in UK in red letters. And it links to a story by the Daily Beast. Daily Beast has been one of my nemesis for a long time. They accused me back in March of 2020. They said, look at this, you know, these right-wing conspiracy theorists are out there saying that this whole thing is a medical dictatorship. It's going to turn into a medical. Look at this guy. Look at David Knight. He's just pushing all this crazy alarmism and everything, scaring everybody to death. Okay. And so I knew that eventually they were going to, all they have to do is just say, yeah, in my opinion, I think that was an Omicron that got him. I think it was Omicron ran over him right there. And so there's the Daily Beast serving it up just as needed. They said the death proves, it proves, one death worldwide. They've been telling everybody that Omicron is spreading faster than anything else. And nobody's dying. They said it's all mild and we're not even putting people in the hospital. Now the Daily Beast, the Daily Lying Beast, says the death proves that the Omicron variant is no less lethal than its predecessors. So be afraid. Be very afraid. After 3 weeks of fear-mongering, and they're actually pulling this stuff back, now they're going to double down with that. As a matter of fact, when we covered this earlier, Travis, did I miss that on the picture there when, or is that a Photoshop thing? I don't know. I think somebody Photoshopped that passing bicycle. It looked like, yeah, is he? He's holding up a single finger, isn't he? I thought he was waving to Bojo, but he's giving him a one-finger salute as they pass. And somebody caught that. So I missed that in the picture. I didn't see that. So, yeah, thanks. Let's talk a little bit about Julian Assange. It bothered me so much to see him and others languishing under this kind of imprisonment unjustly, and it bothered me a great deal last year on January the 20th, because there was no pardon for Julian Assange, no gratitude from Trump for not only what he did for Trump personally, but no gratitude for telling the truth that we need to know about what our government is doing. Didn't stand with that at all. There was no pardon for Julian Assange. I remember even the day, up to the day before, Alex went out with an emergency update telling everybody, I've got it on good news source that Trump is going to pardon Julian Assange just before midnight, just before his term expires. He's going to pardon Julian Assange. Well, you know, Alex Jones wasn't right. He is wrong far more times in my experience than he is right. And he was definitely wrong about this. But it also bothered me, I got to say, just as much for different reasons, to see the case of Dana Gottesfeld's husband, Marty, and to see Lynn Ulbricht's son given multiple life sentences, Ross Ulbricht. Those people were made examples of because they offended some powerful people. And they were given punishment that I don't think they committed any crime. But even if they committed the crime, the punishment was just so excessive. They should have been pardoned for that. And to see Trump turn his back on that, that just bothered me so much, January the 20th. And now we have Julian Assange, as this came out, as I pointed out, on Friday morning. It broke our time about 4 in the morning. And I meant to talk about it, and I got sidetracked with some other stuff. But then, as reported, even though he's 50 years old, he had a stroke. He was watching this happening, and he's been struggling with this for many, many years. He's been essentially imprisoned in the embassy, and then put under very, very harsh conditions in Belmarsh, as you had Ecuador had a political change, and new politicians abandoned him to the Five Eyes intelligence community that is persecuting him, headed up by the U.S. The five English-speaking countries, the U.S., Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the U.K., working together. Assange has reportedly been left with a drooping right eyelid, memory problems, and signs of neurological damage following a mini-stroke. It's reported that the stroke happened at the time of the high court appearance via video link in October. His fiancée, Stella Morris, said he is struggling with the stress of fighting extradition to the U.S. prison. Since the mini-stroke, he has reportedly had an MRI scan and is taking anti-stroke medication. So just from a humanitarian standpoint, I don't think he should have been imprisoned at all. It was obvious that the charges for which they were coming after him initially, allegations of rape, you know, two women saying that both of them had been raped at the same time by him, that looked suspicious. It looked like something like, you know, the P dossier that Hillary and her perverts came up with. But they eventually recanted that, and those charges were dropped. But that wasn't about that at all. After they got him in prison, they're going to keep him there till they can kill him, and they're going to keep him incommunicado. They've been given assurances that they're not going to put him in solitary confinement, and that's not worth the piece of paper it's written on. His lawyers have previously argued that he is a high suicide risk and is too sick to be sent to America for a trial. But as Vanity Fair points out, his extradition ruling strikes a blow to press freedom. I'm just absolutely amazed at how little this is talked about by the press that loves to pat itself on the back. Look at New York Post. Look at the New York Times and the Washington Post, for example. It wasn't that long ago that you had the movie done by Hollywood, you had Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, and I don't remember if it was directed by Spielberg or whatever, but it was called The Post, and it was about the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg, a guy who worked for the Pentagon, who allegedly released a lot of Pentagon papers showing how the government was lying to us about Vietnam. He was charged, but then based on technicality, he got off. He gave those papers to the Washington Post and to the New York Times, and that movie was about the discussions and debates within those two newspapers as to whether or not they were going to publish it. They were afraid of their liability. There wasn't a question with them, they said, as to whether or not they believed the veracity of the papers, but whether or not they thought they would be legally culpable. And they did, and it was found that that was protected by the First Amendment, and it should have been. They said, unless they stole it, they can, if somebody else stole it and gave you, a whistleblower steals this and gives this to you, you can publish it. And that's what we've operated under. So they tried to pretend, in order to come after Julian Assange, that he was the one who had stolen this information. But that's not true. And what they're really upset about, this is the military-industrial complex, the true government, the MIC and the IC, the military-industrial complex and the intelligence community, have had it in for Julian Assange ever since the leak of collateral murder, showing the cold-blooded murder from a video camera on a helicopter gunship, the cold-blooded murder of a journalist and others who he was obviously carrying a camera. These people were non-combatants. They shot them up. They laughed about it. They waited until the Red Cross vehicle got there, clearly had a Red Cross painted on it. They waited and watched while they put them into the ambulance, and then they shot up the ambulance. That's a war crime. Those people should have been tried. Instead, they decided they would come after Julian Assange. And you know, people like Mike Pompeo, but the entire group there, it's not a partisan thing. It's all of them. And so this judge in the UK, Judge Timothy Holroyd, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, noted that the U.S. has assured him that Assange will not be held in a maximum security holding facility. Well, I would imagine that they're either lying or they will put him in one of these communication management units like they have Marty Gottesfeld and they have Schaefer Cox and many other people who are political prisoners, and that's what Julian Assange is. He's a political prisoner. He did not commit treason. He's not an American citizen. He is a journalist publishing what whistleblowers gave to him. And we should all be concerned about where this is leading. They'll probably put him in a communications management unit, which is where they put terrorists as well as political prisoners here in the United States. We have two of those already, one of them in Indiana. Terre Haute, Indiana is where Marty Gottesfeld is, and Schaefer Cox. There's a second one. They're building another one. These are domestic gitmos. and they keep you under solitary confinement and do, I've talked many times to Dana Gottesfeld, Marty Gottesfeld's wife, about what is happening there. If convicted, Assange faces a possible 175-year prison sentence. Why? Because he exposed the crimes of the American deep state. And Trump did nothing. Trump made it clear which side he was on, right up to the last minute. Alex Jones was assuring us that Trump had not sided with the deep state. Stella Morris, Julian Assange's fiance, said he would plan to appeal the decision. She said, how fair can it be? How can it be fair? How can it be right? How can it be possible to extradite Julian to the very country which had plotted to kill him? As they point out on RT, not RT, this is New American covering it, lest her claim that the United States, quote, plotted to kill him, unquote, lest that sounds like hyperbole, it should be noted that there is evidence that her claim is spot on. In February 2020, Assange's extradition hearing was told of the plot, which included plans for U.S. spies to, quote, kidnap or even poison Julian Assange using shady Spanish private detectives after he had leaked 250,000 top-secret documents online, unquote. So the idea that Assange could possibly get a fair trial in the United States is infantile and ridiculous. That's the New American. And you see the same thing coming from many other reporters who are on the left side of things. Yeah, it truly is an attack on the First Amendment. And from a humanitarian standpoint, it is despicable. New American goes on to say, Americans who believe in due process need to contact their representatives and senators and demand that they take whatever measures they can to assure his safety and a fair trial. Because if Uncle Sam can silence real journalism, there will be precious little to stand in the way of tyranny's juggernaut. Let's understand that real government, that Uncle Sam is now the military-industrial complex and has been for quite some time, and the intelligence community. And that is not a monolithic thing. They fight each other, and they compete, just like the Republican and Democrat Party fight each other. But they have a core common mission between them. So you have this RT article, the U.S. will break its assurances on Assange, and here's why. We know that because of their history of what the assurances that they made with a Spanish prisoner and what subsequently happened with that. Alam Barkari of Breitbart News, and he's a very good reporter. There's a lot of people at Breitbart that become vaccine cheerleaders that are completely subsumed in the partisan politics of Republican versus Democrat. Alam Barkari stands out as, I think, the only honest journalist across the board that I see at Breitbart. The rest of the people are interesting to read from a partisan standpoint, but he is spot on. He said, Julian Assange is anarcho-tyranny's victim number one. That's a good way to put it. In Queens, New York, a suspected gang member and murderer was let out onto the streets under the city's no-bail laws. In the same borough, a man who tried to kill an undercover police officer by throwing him onto subway tracks was also released without bail. See, the point that Bokhari is making here is that enemies of the state will be punished severely, excessively, relentlessly, because the state is going to protect itself. And that same corrupt state will do absolutely nothing to protect you from these types of violent criminals and property criminals that you see these gangs that are running loose. This is what our government is becoming, letting out real criminals and making criminals out of people who don't wear the mask, don't get the vaccine, and who expose government corruption, crimes, and lies. John Pilger in the UK calls it a judicial kidnapping. He says this is his punishment for the crime. This is the new crime. Authentic, accurate, courageous, vital journalism. That's now a crime. A CIA front that spied on Julian's lawyers and doctors and confidants, he said, myself included. All of that was ignored. So was a revelation that a Spanish-run security firm was spying on him. that there was talk about an assassination. George Galloway, a former member of the British Parliament, again, somebody from the left, he had this to say: if Julian Assange, and I think this is one of the better analogies from George Galloway, he says, if Julian Assange were a Chinese journalist, if Julian Assange were a Chinese publisher, he'd have a Nobel Prize. He'd be the centerpiece of Human Rights Day. If he was a Chinese journalist, Julian Assange's name would have been the first on U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's list of 300 journalists under threat that was published without any irony, without any shame, on the very same day that Antony Blinken's administration, the Biden administration, sought to extradite Assange to face 175 years in a supermax prison. Think about that. How hypocritical these people are, and just how this is nothing but politics. And this is why I said you're not going to get any help at all from the Republicans on this lockdown unless Biden is in charge. And then they will play around with some things on the fringe, like you see Rand Paul. You know, he'll attack Fauci. He'll talk about Wuhan, but he won't talk about the vaccine. He won't talk about the lockdown, how that needs to be struck because it completely contradicts everything that the Constitution is about. But when you look at this, you've got the Biden administration, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, putting out a list of 350 journalists that have been attacked by the Chinese government on the very same day that they do this to Julian Assange. Now they get the extradition. He goes on to say, George Galloway, once it emerged that the U.S. government had laid its careful plans to kidnap Assange in London, and if necessary, murder him outside of Harrods in the streets around the Ecuadorian embassy, the value of any U.S. assurances about what would happen to Assange reached rock bottom. They could not be relied on, and extradition could not possibly be countenanced, except by a corrupt judge. I'll add, he didn't say that. However, the printing presses are not rolling for Assange quietly being killed in Belmarsh prison. And then I'll conclude before we get into some headline news, what is happening with gun control. The U.S. is threatening one organization already in the United States. You want to see where the future of honest journalism is headed here in the United States? The Strategic Culture Foundation, a website that describes itself as a research platform on Eurasian global affairs. The person, a writer there, Daniel Lazar, said that American journalists are being threatened with large fines by the U.S. Treasury for writing for the wrong websites. He said he and other U.S. journalists who have written for Strategic Culture Foundation recently received threatening letters from the Treasury Department warning that they could be on the hook for at least $300,000 in sanction penalties. He said, it is impossible to battle the U.S. Treasury in this kind of a case. The Treasury's power is enormous, while that of an individual freelance journalist is microscopic. He cited the chilling effect of merely receiving such a document. He pointed out that few journalists would even acknowledge being targeted this way, never mind coming forward to do an interview about it, as he had. Washington, he said they're unwilling to write, they're unwilling to talk about it because they're too afraid to write. Just like we got people who, some people I know, go to London multiple times, cover Bilderberg, never go to interview Julian Assange. Too dangerous, right? Or live in London and you don't go interview Julian Assange. Too dangerous, right? Washington had targeted the website Strategic Culture Foundation, several others, with a round of sanctions in April, claiming it was involved in election interference controlled by Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service. He said, to stop journalists from writing about these kinds of websites is a new step. I was surprised because the U.S., in fact, has a very good track record when it comes to a free press. In America, we can say anything we want. This is not America. This is not your daddy's America, not by a long shot. We'll be right back. It's some headline news, much of it political, without budget gimmicks. Biden's Build Back Better will add $3 trillion to the deficit, said the CBO. Now, this is from Reason Magazine. And, you know, we've heard the absurd stuff, Biden saying, well, it doesn't add anything to the deficit. Well, it adds $3 trillion to the deficit. As Reason pointed out, here's how they are lying to you. As the language would suggest, the president and his supporters in Congress see the massive domestic policy bill as a permanent reshaping of the relationship between individuals and the government. But something isn't transformative if it is fleeting. And that's the reality. That's how they're playing the budget game. Most of the bill, as currently written, is temporary. The extension of an expanded child tax credit, which pays parents up to $3,000 per child, and is one of the most expensive elements of the plan, would technically last for just a single year. And then they'll renew it, and then they'll renew it again. And they're putting this in and saying, well, we're only going to do it for a year, so therefore it's not a budget buster. But you know that this is part of their transformative vision for our society in a Marxist socialist way. And so you know that they're going to re-up that every year. And if you go through and you actually do the math, which is what the Congressional Budget Office did, the CBO, then you find out that it totals up to $3 trillion. As they point out, Social Security didn't vanish 3 years after it was created, you know, like you're doing these other things. And believe me, they're just getting the camel's nose under the tent. Speaking of which, I don't think I ever covered that. Did I cover that last week? The camel beauty contest? The fact that they caught these guys in Saudi Arabia. Let me just put this in as a side. It's just too crazy not to talk about it. They were doing, they caught these people doing plastic surgery and Botox on camels because they have a beauty contest in Saudi Arabia. And this goes back to when camels were highly valued by the Bedouin. And now they're having beauty contests. And a lot of money is involved, of course, because, you know, we're talking about Saudi Arabs who just, they got cash coming up for everything. And I looked at that and I commented to my family. I said, so Saudi Arabia, where they put complete, total head-to-toe burkas on the women, and they have beauty contests for camels. And they give them Botox to make the lips look larger. I don't know. I mean, you know, of course, we do have our Joe Camel, or at least we used to. Anyway, back to this. Let's see, where did I leave off? The camel's nose under the tent. The camel's nose under the tent is to put in this massive expansion of the welfare state, saying we're only going to fund it for a year, maybe two, and then to come back in and know that it's going to be extended. The CBO found that it would cost about $1.8 trillion, and it would add $367 billion to the deficit over the next decade. But Lindsey Graham, little Lindsey, asked the CBO on Friday, he said, could you tell me what the budgetary effects be if parts of this bill made permanent? And they said, yeah, it'll increase the deficit by $3 trillion. So Maya McGuinness, president of the CRFB, said, arbitrary expirations don't make policies cheaper. They just make them shorter. And sooner or later, politicians will have to come to terms with how to address these new benefit cliffs. That's what they're doing, the cliff. And they're going to play the same game that they do, you know, to extend the deficit. You know, let's raise the debt ceiling. You know, people are saying, what's the point of having a debt ceiling if you just arbitrarily raise it all the time? And I repeated that and I said, what's the point of having an income tax if you never even come close to paying for the government? This is just to keep discretionary income away from us. And to put these things in there, knowing that they're going to then say, well, you know, we got to have an emergency extension of this and emergency funding of this because this new program that we put in a year ago is about to expire. And we lied to you because we only gave you the price of it for a year, not for 10 years. So it's going to add $3 trillion to the deficit. Meanwhile, you have Jimmy Fallon this weekend gushing over Biden, saying you are bringing class back to the presidency. Question is, what class? Maybe class notes. He had some cliff notes that he was shown, you know, going through. We could call them Jimmy notes instead of cliff notes because he had 3x5 cards that he's reading off of. And they point out in this article on Breitbart, because again, this is about partisan politics, so they're right there on it. Last year, the late night host, Jimmy Fallon, interviewed disgraced Governor Andrew Cuomo. And during the interview, Jimmy Fallon described Cuomo's handling of the pandemic as honest and perfect. He praised the governor for giving the public facts. Meanwhile, we see Biden rushing and pushing to go to war. And we need to all stand up and say, let's not go, Joe. Maybe we could make that. Instead of let's go, Brandon, we could say, let's not go, Joe. We need to make that a rallying cry because we do not want to get caught up in a war. It's kind of interesting in this article. They ask, this is an article from Sheldon Richmond, the Libertarian Institute. He said, which of you Americans out there ready to die for Kiev? Die for Kiev. You know, we don't want Russia taking back the Ukraine or whatever. And I think the Ukraine ought to be able to declare independence. And I also think that that Belarus ought to be able to declare independence from the Ukraine. I mean, that's the way it works, right? Shouldn't we? But yet you have the people who say, well, no, you know, they should be able to be independent. And then this other subdivision of the Ukraine, they should not, not Belarus, Crimea, should not be able to get out of Ukraine. That's the hypocrisy of all this. But there's something else, because you had these. I showed you all the protests from the UK, from Brussels, from Melbourne in Australia. And this was also happening in Kiev. These are people who are protesting, wait for it, vaccine mandates. So what does that tell you? What does that tell you? That tells you, perhaps, if you're paying attention, that this Kiev, the Ukrainian government, is right there as part of the new world order, world government that's already been established, pushing these vaccine mandates. As a matter of fact, I had a listener who sent this to me. He said, did you see the piece that Tucker Carlson did on Hungary a few months back? It demonstrates a leader who is aggressively attempting to prevent election interference, an admirable cause that is taboo to speak about here in the States, in the present news landscape of truth, often being the opposite of what is being reported. I've been provoked to question the ongoing constant verbal diarrhea produced by our media against Russia. This thought exercise has made it very clear to me that Russia is a bigger problem for the globalists than they are to the U.S. I mean, you know, Ukraine's not a problem. They're doing the vaccine mandates. As you can see, the people are in the streets protesting the vaccine mandates. Not to say, I don't know what the situation is in Russia. Maybe they've got them there as well. But as he puts it, Russia literally stands for everything that is anti-globalist. They have traditional values, gangster capitalism. He says 79% Christian population. I don't know what the population is, but he says 79%. I know that they at least embrace Russian Orthodox Church from a cultural standpoint. They are renegades to NATO. The UN and other worldwide globalist entities don't like them. There's even been rumors about Putin selecting Bitcoin as a reserve currency, since the IMF and the World Bank have prohibited them from the SWIFT payments system, a clear attempt to penalize them for being disobedient. It's quite odd to me. I look at this picture and I think, does that look like more like the America I thought I was living in than I'm actually living in today? And all this time, my media has trained me to fear them as dangerous, nefarious people. I respect them for their leadership, conviction, and courage to stand up to the globalists, to attempt sovereignty without entrenched globalist interests. Unfortunately, it appears the U.S. is far more entrenched and entangled in an elaborate globalist web that we may not get out of. He said, just take a look at the differences in outcomes for Ed Snowden versus Julian Assange. And that's absolutely true. And he wrote that before this extradition came out for Julian Assange. And so that is from D. We'll just put that there, the letter D. And as we're talking about this Ukraine, as mentioned, you know, are you ready to die for Ukraine? Asked the Libertarian Institute. Others ask, while the ongoing Ukraine war scare has brought Europe to the brink of a crisis, at the same time, it's given rise to a modest but promising hope that there could be a revival in diplomacy and negotiations between great powers. I don't know. When you look at, as they point out in this article, Senator Roger Wicker, a Republican from Mississippi, went public just days ago to advise President Biden to keep his options open when it comes to Ukraine, suggesting not just considering using conventional military force, but potentially using nuclear weapons. You see, this is what is dangerous at this point in time. When you want to increase the scope of government control in the welfare state, it's easiest to do that under a Republican president because people don't expect that. And when you look at, you know, everybody knows that's what the Democrats want to do. And everybody knows that the Republicans are neocons. They want to go to war everywhere. And so it's easier to do that type of thing under Biden because his own base will give him a pass when they would have opposed it under Republicans. In the same way that Trump's base will give him a pass when he does lockdown and vaccines, even though they would have opposed it with Hillary Clinton. And so that's why this truly is a dangerous point in time, because you've got a Democrat in power that his base will not hold his feet to the fire if he does something like this. They know that as well. And so you have Trump, who has gone to war with us for the globalist government domestically, went to war against his own base, the middle class of Main Street. And now you have the Democrat Party, and you got this guy, Joe Biden, who is, you know, being pushed and goaded by the Republicans to start a kinetic war, even with nuclear weapons. We're just about out of time. I just want to make a quick statement about, and I guess I could call this anchors away, because we've got a lot of anchors who are going away. Not that I'm looking for their job or anything. I wouldn't last through one broadcast. They would, you know, Alex at least waited till I was finished with my broadcast before he fired me for what I said. These guys would give me the hook right in the middle of it. Brian Williams quits TV. He said, America in 2021 is unrecognizable. Reality is, he says, I'll wake up tomorrow in the America of the year 2021, a nation that is unrecognizable to those who came before us and who fought to protect it, which is what you must do now, he said. They've decided to burn it all down with us inside. And that should scare you to no end, as it much as it scares an aging volunteer fireman. I saw that quote, and I thought, that is really powerful. But see, I don't think he's talking about what you and I are thinking. I don't think he's thinking about the Great Reset. I don't think he's thinking about the miracle Trump juice, the Trump AIDS, the Soylent genes and the GCI, the genetic code injections and the vaccine passports and the constant tracking. And so, he's not looking at that. He's looking at just the rancor, I think, in D.C. He's not looking at the globalism, at the eugenics, at the New World Order, at the Mark of the Beast, or any of that stuff. He goes on to say, well, I'm not a liberal or conservative, I'm an institutionalist. Grown men and women who swore an oath to our Constitution, elected by their constituents, possessing the kinds of college degrees I could only dream of, have decided to join the mob and become something they are not, while hoping we somehow forget who they are. And so in this, maybe I'm wrong, I hope I'm wrong, maybe now, maybe he's going to, who knows, maybe Brian Williams has had enough. And maybe he's going to fight the system from the outside. I hope so. But in a sense, you know, he seems to be making peace with this stuff. He says, I've had a really wonderful life. I'm hyper aware of that. And it remains a wonderful life. It's as if I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning in Bedford Falls. But the reality is I will wake up tomorrow in America 2021, as I mentioned that same quote. And they're trying to burn this down. He says that America has become unrecognizable to those who came before us, who fought to protect it. He said, my colleagues will take it from here, which makes me think that he's not really going to go full on to fight this. Speaking of another anchor away, Chris Wallace, who has now, you know, done what he is, in effect, had done quite some time ago, joined CNN. He has now decided that he will leave the news organization with much higher ratings. But I imagine even though he's going to CNN with much lower ratings, he'll probably get much higher pay there because he'll see that as something of a coup. And the thing is that Chris Wallace is not the reason that you've got high ratings at Fox News. Not at all. It's because of people like Tucker Carlson. It's not because of Chris Wallace. He's become a liability, frankly, for them. He cannot hide his bias anymore. And let's make No mistake about it. Everybody has a bias. You should, I think, and this is why I do my news program the way I do it, everybody's got a bias. Be honest about that bias and just tell people why you believe what you believe. Cover the news and say, here's what I think it believes, but these people try to pretend that they're totally objective and disinterested, and nobody is. If they really believe that, they're idiots. And if you believe that, you're a fool. You should not recognize. I mean, look, we all know, just take Drudge for example, right? Everybody thought of Drudge as a conservative slash libertarian, and now everybody knows he's gone to the other side. Drudge doesn't write articles. Drudge is an editor. He decides which articles he's going to curate in his news aggregation. But you can tell from the angles and from the people that he curates, people like the Daily Beast pushing this, oh, Omicron's killed one person worldwide, one person out of 7 billion, they say. We don't even know that. They probably didn't do a DNA sequence on that or an autopsy. So you know that it is simply what you decide to report. It's not even what you have to say. But so the articles that I pick, the things that I decide to talk about, that represents what I think is important, and I tell you what I think about it. So anyway, going back to this, just for example, are things really going to be that much different for Chris Wallace when he goes to CNN? Who wrote this headline? Mixing Pfizer and Moderna vaccines gives a better immune system response against COVID-19, says the study. That could be Fox. It could be CNN. As a matter of fact, it is Fox. So he's going to be perfectly at home. There will be nothing to distinguish his work at CNN from his work at Fox News if it involves vital issues. And when I say vital issues, I mean the war against the world's population by the global elitist, by the New World Government. It's not a, you know, this is not coming, it's here. So he's going to be AOL in that war. The war that is foreign and domestic, he's going to push the vaccine, and he'll push it real hard at CNN, just like he pushed it there at Fox, just like Fox does. Other people who've gone, and Bill O'Reilly wasn't really an anchor, but he was, you know, part of their lineup. He's now gone, and he's there with Donald Trump. They're beginning their tour, and the reports are, from Newsweek at least, empty seats in Florida. FL Florida Live Arena had many seats that remained empty, according to the Sun Sentinel. The top level was closed off, and those who had tickets for that area were upgraded to the lower bowl, the newspaper reported. Pictures on social media showed the top tier of the arena completely empty, though it was not clear when they were taken, and empty seats dotted throughout the arena. Trump entertained the crowd with comments mocking President Joe Biden, saying the U.S. is no longer great, and repeating claims that the 2020 election was stolen from him. He doesn't care about the vaccine. He doesn't care about the lockdowns. It's all still just about him. You look at these billionaires, they're completely self-absorbed. He had people criticizing Jeff Bezos because he was out there tweeting about his rockets when people were forced to continue to work even though they knew tornadoes were coming at an Amazon warehouse. It collapsed on 100 people, 6 at least are dead. You think these billionaires care any more about you than they do the ant on the sidewalk? And that includes Trump. He said, it's a horrible thing to say, but I don't feel that America right now is great. He told the crowd that he got along best with tyrants like Putin and Kim Jong-un. He said, the ones I did best with were the tyrants for whatever reason. And he also talked about January the 6th. He said there was love in the air. I've never seen love around this guy. Yeah, take his juice. Come on and take my juice. And finally, just as we got about a minute or so left, maybe less, the Supreme Court, and I'll probably talk about this tomorrow. Well, I'll just wait and talk about it tomorrow. The Supreme Court decision is now being used by Gavin Newsom saying, well, I'm going to get people out there to shut down any gun ownership in the state of California. Why? Because we had no one in Texas with the backbone to stand up and say, under the 9th and 10th Amendment, we make the law to protect innocent life in Texas. They had to play games. That's it for the broadcast.
common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.